President Bush on Thursday and voted to convert half his $20.3 billion Iraqi building plan into a loan, dealing the White House an embarrassing foreign policy setback. Despite an administration lobbying blitz that in recent days involved virtually every top administration official, the Republican-run chamber voted 51-47 for a bipartisan proposal making $10 billion of the aid a loan. Its approval by the Senate marked the first congressional vote in opposition to Bush's policies in Iraq. It was also the latest of several setbacks that Congress has dealt him in recent months on issues including concentration of media ownership, new rules on overtime pay, and travel to Cuba. Front-running Democratic presidential candidate Howard Dean called for the creation of a $100 billion fund to assist states and local governments in creating jobs, and he offered a plan to close tax loopholes in an appearance at Georgetown University on Thursday. Dean described President Bush's economic policies as Enron economics, saying that Bush had brought the Enron model from Texas to Washington. Intelligence officials say al-Qaeda-linked terrorists in Asia have quickly replaced captured leaders with a new operations chief and top bomb makers who are once again plotting deadly attacks in the region. The arrest of Hambali, Osama bin Laden's alleged point man in Asia, and the cracking of a terror ring blamed for bombings in Bali did temporarily disrupt the network, but the leadership vacuum left by Hambali's August 11th arrest was filled within 3 weeks, even as the Islamic militant group carried out a recruiting drive in Indonesia. Federal agents raided two Philadelphia city departments and the offices of a lawyer with ties to Mayor John Street on Thursday, 9 days after an FBI bug was discovered in the mayor's office. Agents spent several hours at the three locations. An FBI spokeswoman declined to comment on the raids. More after this.
Hi, my name's Maria, and I'm alive today because I was given CPR last year by Rick,
who took a class with the Red Cross after I received blood from Jamal, who gave blood after being encouraged by my friend Angela,
who helped Jamal's whole family get the help and support they needed after losing their home to a fire.
When we come together, we become part of something bigger than us all. By getting involved with the Red Cross, you never know how many people your actions will affect. To get involved, visit redcross.org. The American Red Cross. Together, we can save a life.
A supermarket rat that had dodged a number of poison traps got its comeuppance when an 80-year-old shopper knocked it unconscious after it tried to steal her cheese, a Belgian daily said on Thursday. The rat had been hiding in the supermarket for a month, but staff attempts to trap the rodent had repeatedly failed. The woman reportedly felt a sharp pain and noticed the rat hanging from her finger and slammed it to the floor. For IE American Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
The great savings event at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Hurry in and save $6 a gallon on all paints and stains, including Super Paint and Everclean in our new plastic twist and pour container. Plus, save 30 to 64% on all wallpaper. Stop by soon. Sale ends Monday.
Ask Sherwin-Williams.
For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Fat. Americans are fat. Our children are fat. Our pets are fat. We've become a nation of unhealthy chubbos, thanks largely to the fact that we snarf down too much of too many overfatty foods. In the face of this growing health problem, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association has come out with just what the doctor didn't order. Cheeseburger fries. Yes, strips of deep-fried cheeseburgers. Instead of something lean and light to meet America's nutritional needs, the big beef purveyors have concocted a fat-soaked, calorie-laden new snack item guaranteed to add to our total tonnage. Shaped like oversized French fries, this plump delicacy is made by mushing ground beef and cheese nuggets together, then breading the mixture and plunging the strips into the deep fryer. Just one of these sticks of nutritional dynamite contains about 75 calories and up to 6 grams of fat. But no one eats just one. They generally come 5 to an order. So in one quick setting, you can pump a greasy 375 calories and 30 grams of fat into your bod. Now, I'm certainly no dainty prig of an eater. I grew up eating corn dogs and Frito pies. I just recently enjoyed a batch of deep-fried cheese curds in Minnesota, and nachos with refried beans and cheese are a way of life for me. But there's already plenty of tasty fat in our lives without larding in an extra fatty finger snack. Especially galling is the intention of the Beef Boys to force their corpulent creation on our children. They're now trying to market cheeseburger fries to public school cafeterias, peddling a version that contains the most fat of all. This is Jim Hightower saying, but kids' nutrition be damned. There's beef to be sold. This is about raw profiteering. As the Beef Association says, we want beef in dessert if we can get it in there. Oh, goody, cheeseburger ice cream coming up next.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in the American way. This is Tom Hartman, broadcasting live on terrestrial radio stations from coast to coast, broadcasting live from the depths of outer space in the Sirius satellite radio system, and also streaming on the internet at radiopower.org, live365.com, and ieamericaradio.com, the website for this radio station, or for this network, rather. And your local radio station may or may not have its own. I encourage you to check it out. Is the Bush administration the most corrupt in history? We have so much news right now, and it all is falling into this one kind of general area. Let's start out with recapping or re-listening here to Joe Wilson.
But we'll see. I mean, I don't think we're going to let this drop. At the end of the day, it's of keen interest to me to see whether or not we can get Karl Rove frog marched out of the White House in handcuffs.
I was just mentioning in our chat room, I wonder how many days it's been since the leak that he's been free. It'd be interesting to count down.
And trust me, when I use that name, I measure my words.
We know the day is today is day 249 in the search for weapons of mass destruction. Day 760 in the search for that man whose name shall not pass the lips of George W. Bush, e.g. Osama bin Laden. But how many days since Rove, apparently, or the White House leaker? I wonder how many days since the anthrax mailer mailed anthrax to Democrats who were working on the Patriot Act. Patrick Leahy of Vermont, head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and Tom Daschle, head of all the Senates. How long has it been? It's been too long, I'll tell you. The Republicans recently have been using a new word. And I remember, when I first heard this, I thought, I've heard that before. Remember, you've probably seen the clip 30 times now on TV or heard it on the radio. George Bush talking to a reporter, and he says, we're going to get something about the media filter. The media filter. And the vice president is running around talking about the media filter, and we got to get around this. We got to get the good news out. And was thinking about this, to talk to Louise about it. She did a little research, and we found this speech. It's amazing how what goes around comes around. This speech from 1969, Vice President and soon to be indicted criminal and then ex-Vice President, Spiro T. Agnew.
Yesterday, the President was notified that 300 individual congressmen and 50 senators of both parties had endorsed his efforts for peace.
See, in other words, he's saying everything is going great, folks, but all you're hearing is about the bad news from Vietnam. But everything's fine as a filter.
As with other American institutions, perhaps it is time that the networks were made more responsive to the views of the nation and more responsible to the people they serve.
Yes, we need to make the networks more responsive and responsible to me, Agnew says.
I want to make myself perfectly clear. I'm not asking for government censorship or any other kind of censorship. I'm asking whether a form of censorship already exists. When the news that 40 million Americans...
Here it comes.
When the news that 40 million Americans receive each night is determined by a handful of men responsible only to their corporate employers...
Here it comes.
...and is filtered through a handful of commentators who admit to their own set of biases.
Eureka! It's the media filter. Spiro T. Agnew, the originator of the phrase that has been brought back into good repute. The media filter. Of course, as administrations run by criminals like Agnew, and, you know, I think I can safely say that. Right? I mean, the guy was being indicted for corruption back when he was, a mayor or something? And ended up resigning as vice president rather than go to prison. So when you see arguably criminal or corrupt or criminally corrupt administrations, there's this pattern, a certain pattern that seems to go along with them that has to do with blaming the media. Oh, it's the media filter. It's the media's fault. The good news of what we're doing is not getting out. This administration has actually done a very good job of changing the subject, of getting us all to pay attention to the fact that they are going after the media filter and forget that one of the, perhaps, the largest, most awful felony in the history of the White House has been committed. I want to get into this in some detail. This is quite extraordinary. The Democratic National Committee has just released a new advertisement about this topic. Let me just play this for you very quickly.
It keeps getting worse. Scandals in the Bush White House. Now they illegally leaked the identity of an American CIA agent, all to hide Bush administration deceptions about the war in Iraq.
I have nothing but contempt and anger for those who betray the trust. They are, in my view, the most insidious of traitors.
He's right about this one. It's time for an independent investigation and the truth.
The Democratic National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
And now several senior criminal prosecutors at the Justice Department, according to yesterday's New York Times, the headline, Senior Federal Prosecutors and FBI Officials Fault Ashcroft Over Leak Inquiry. Now, get this. This article in the New York Times is quoting people who are Ashcroft's friends. And in fact, it says one of them, several of them include political supporters within the Justice Department and the FBI. In other words, people who are not just his friends, they share his worldview. And they think that he is potentially taking the fall for somebody at the White House. And they don't want this to happen. I mean, there's a very big concern here. Several senior criminal prosecutors at the Justice Department and top FBI officials have privately criticized Attorney General John Ashcroft for failing to recuse himself or appoint a special prosecutor to investigate the leak of a CIA operative's identity. The New York Times article by David Johnson and Eric Lichtblau says the criticism reflects the first sign of dissension in the department and the FBI as the inquiry nears a critical phase. Ashcroft is going to have to decide whether he's going to just try to do this internally, whether he's going to have a grand jury, which would have the power to force people to testify or throw them in jail if they refuse to, or whether he's going to appoint a special prosecutor. And it goes on to say, the official said they feared Mr. Ashcroft could be damaged by continuing accusations that as an attorney general with a long career in Republican partisan politics, he could not credibly lead a criminal investigation. And then they go on to point out that Janet Reno, seven times in her 8 years as attorney general, seven different times, appointed independent counsels to investigate her boss, Bill Clinton. But Janet Reno wasn't cozy buddies with Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton had this old-fashioned idea. It goes back to, 1776. That government service is an obligation. That the government of the United States is, in a way, sacred. In a kind of secular sacred, if you know what I mean. That to serve in the government is a great and extraordinary opportunity to repay the debt of citizenship that we are given by birth or naturalization in this nation. That it's not something that you hand out to political hacks or cronies or large campaign donors. Here we've got John Snow, the Secretary of the Treasury, a guy who raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for George Bush. I've played for you before the debate clips, the Kennedy-Nixon debates, where Kennedy says that in contrast to Nixon's behavior as vice president, that he, and as we saw as Nixon behaved later as president, that he felt that all ambassadorial appointments should be based not on who gave campaign contributions, but based on who really understood international diplomacy and spoke the language of the nations. We're back to campaign contributions. And with Ashcroft, you've got a guy who couldn't defeat a dead guy. He ran for the United States Senate against Mel Carnahan, who died in a mysterious plane crash, almost identical in circumstances to that which killed Paul Wellstone. And that plane crash would have thrown the Senate, or within a vote of throwing the Senate, to the Republicans. Had the people said, okay, Mel Carnahan's dead, let's vote for John Ashcroft, who's running against him. Mel Carnahan was the Democrat. But oddly enough, even though Carnahan had been dead for a while, a couple of weeks, as I recall, they voted for him anyway, and he beat John Ashcroft. So here we've got a guy who is such a lousy senator that the people in his own state voted for a dead guy over him. But George W. said, well, he's a loyal guy. He's a good Republican. He's a close friend. We're going to put him into power. And now you've got Ashcroft and Alberto Gonzalez. I'm wondering if this is going to harm Gonzalez, because they've been talking about setting him up for the next Supreme Court appointment. This is the guy who's the White House lawyer, the White House counsel. He's got the same job John Dean had during the Nixon administration. And Gonzalez and Ashcroft, they're doing this dance. And part of the dance looks like it might be a serious crime. The Justice Department allowed the White House to wait overnight on September 28th before sending an electronic message from the New York Times, I'm reading, ordering White House employees not to destroy records relating to the leak. They gave them overnight. And then Gonzalez says, well, that delay is fine because nobody in the White House had any idea that there was an investigation going on. Well, it had been published that day, or the day before, in the New York Times and the Washington Post, that an investigation was coming. But Gonzalez says, well, nobody in the White House knew, so it was fine that we waited 24 hours and let people shred their documents and destroy their records. Is there anything like this in the history of the United States? Let's take a look right after this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. We'll be right back.
Toyota owners, get head over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at toyota.com/owners.
So you've graduated from college, got a new job, a new place to live, even a new dog, but you're still paying the same old high-interest student loans. Well, we can help. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE, anytime, 24-7. We're College Loan Corporation, and we're dedicated to helping you refinance your college loans with interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest rates in nearly 40 years. Get on with your new life and call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817. The Washington Monthly.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Our scientists have studied and found that our listeners have a lot of stress from the lack of being able to get their questions and comments off of their minds, which can cause nausea, vomiting, and eventually will make you strip down, sit in a corner, and drool while counting pretty yellow and pink elephants flying around.
Okay.
So now, IE America Radio Network is proud to present the IE Hotline. Call and give your comments.
I just wanted to call and let you know your internet station totally rocks off the chart.
Your suggestions.
I think Doug Stephan should be on all day, 24-7, yeah.
Your questions.
Got a question about Bush. How the hell do you put food on your family? What is that?
Crop growth and biologic growth are by the goodwill and volitional control.
Or whatever the heck that just was. So call 1-800-397-8255 and leave a message for any one of our on-air talents. 1-800-397-8255. Operators are standing by. Just kidding. You have to leave a message.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Democracy Zone, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Has there ever been a White House in the history of the United States that has been accused of a felony that could go to the level of causing the death of American officers or compromising American security around the world? That is to say, what might be even considered, or what was called by George Bush Sr., treason. Clearly not. I've got a short history of them here. I'm going to go through with you in just a moment. I want to share, first of all, George W. Bush's thoughts on this, and we've got a caller here.
How many sources have you had that leaked information that you've exposed or have been exposed?
In other words, this is just a leak, folks. You know, this is no big deal. Come on, this is just a leak, right?
Probably none. I mean, this town is a town full of people who like to leak information.
Oh, yeah. So this is no big deal. So let's just, you know, maybe some outing of CIA. No big deal. Yeah, right. Maybe some people died. Maybe some, you know, compromise. A whole entire corporation that was set up 15 years ago to provide front and cover for the CIA is blown. But no, it's just a leak.
And I don't know if we're going to find out the senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea. I'd like to.
Yeah, right.
I want to know the truth.
Yeah, I suspect he already does. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number, 1-800-825-5937. Tom Hartman on the air here, and Phil is on the phone in Florida. That's it.
How you doing?
Squinting through my glasses here. Hey, Phil, I'm great. How are you today?
Okay. Listen, one issue that has been ignored, especially by the apologists for Herr Limbaugh, as well as other people, is the issue of obstruction of justice. Through his attorney, he paid $100,000, okay, for her to destroy the computer that had his emails that could, and the reason he did that is not because she had a PC and he wanted her to buy a Mac. Because of the fact that the emails could incriminate him in a criminal case.
Yeah.
Phil,
I'm with you, and I agree, and I want to stay to this topic until I've at least finished the information
well,
and laid it
you know,
out.
Basically, I think, you know, to a great extent, I think you're reading a dead horse on this issue because the press is not going to do anything about it. The White House.
I think you'll be surprised.
The White House is going to do nothing about it.
Did you hear the ad that I opened the hour with, Phil?
Pardon me?
Did you hear the DNC ad that I opened the show with?
You know, with all due respect, that and 50 cents will buy you a donut. They're beating a dead horse. The press is the only people that can make this thing happen, and they're not interested.
Hey, we are the press.
Now, I'm talking about ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, or forget Fox.
But it always starts someplace. You know, it starts someplace, Phil, and this is, I don't think we're going to let this thing drop. And I don't think that the people within this administration who are worried about this are going to let it drop.
Kicker,
I mean, there are people
in
the CIA who got burned,
right,
and they're really upset.
Right. I think bringing down Rush Limbaugh, okay, who is their primary spokesperson for promoting George W. Bush and who helped single-handedly Mr. Gingrich and the boys take over, okay, bringing him down is going to do more than finding a couple people in the White House who will finally have to ultimately maybe fall on their swords and go away.
Yeah, I disagree. I'm telling you, if you get rid of Rush Limbaugh, there's 15 more standing behind him. There is already in the United States a powerful network of right-wing talk radio. Left-wing talk radio is starting to grow as a balance for it. It's simply because if you have a demand for something in the marketplace long enough, somebody will step in to fill it. In fact, I wrote about this in commondreams.org today. You can read the article. And eventually people will say, hey, you know, there's a market here that's unserved. It's all those people who voted for Al Gore. If Rush goes away, cool, but, you know, Sean Hannity has almost as good ratings. There'll be no shortage of right-wingers. But this is a real issue, Phil. This is a real issue, a real crime. Phil, thanks for the call. This is Tom Hartman on IE. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Americans don't know much about geography, but the tools that could help them learn are getting better all the time. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. A recent survey sponsored by National Geographic found a lot of ignorance about the layout of the world among 18 to 24-year-old Americans. For example, 30% of them could not locate the Pacific Ocean on a map. Bill Stair is the former president of National Geographic Maps.
11% of young citizens of the United States can't even locate the United States on a map. More young people in the United States know where the island featured in last season's TV show Survivor, where it's located, than can find Israel on a map. And, you know, to understand what's going on in the world, we have to know something about it.
Sweden, Germany, and Italy scored highest among those surveyed. Stair says those countries place more emphasis on travel and the study of language and geography. But he says Americans have plenty of opportunity to learn about the world because the tools to do so are getting better all the time. Information and images collected from satellites make it possible to add detail to maps like never before. Stair says a lot of that information is readily available, both on the Internet and in books. For example, he says the new edition of the National Geographic World Atlas for Young Explorers includes up-to-date satellite imagery designed to catch the eye of even today's most video-dependent kids. Stair says parents need to get these kinds of brightly illustrated books into their homes. He says they should leave them out in plain view, maybe next to the TV remote control, where their children can easily pick them up and browse. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with animals?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on, this is a commercial for a major radio network. We can do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
This is Mike Malloy with the IE America Radio Network. Want to know more about our talk shows and personalities but don't know where to look? Do you want to find out what guests are scheduled or what topics we'll be discussing on our programs? Would you like to participate in live chat or vote in interactive polls? All this and more is available at the IE America Radio website. Bookmark it, stop surfing, and get active. Visit www.ieamericaradio.com today.
Best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
For a film today, oh boy, the English army had just won the war. A crowd of people turned away, but I just had to look, having read the
Talk Radio for the rest of us. This is Tom Hartman exposing the con in conservative here on the IE America Radio Network. Phil raised an interesting point, our caller from Florida just a minute ago, and I really want to talk about this for just a second, and then I'm going to get back into this topic here. Yesterday, two interesting things happened yesterday. One, I had pretty much put together an article for Common Dreams about the history of conservative media and how liberal media is starting to catch up. There's a conference happening, I believe it's next week. It's the 27th and 28th. I don't have a calendar in front of me. It's either, I think it's a week after next, in Washington, D.C., the Center for American Progress, a new think tank, John Podesta's new think tank. I'm going to be broadcasting live from there. Wesley Clark is going to be speaking. They got a bunch of other people. It is beginning. You know, it's like the beginning of the Heritage Foundation. The Democrats or the liberals or whatever you want to call this are 10, 12, 14 years behind the conservatives. But the game plan is there. The strategy is pretty straightforward. And the reality is that there is a marketplace. There is a market for these kinds of things. And it's starting. It's just starting to break out, but it's really starting to grow. This program, for example, is starting to really grow quickly. We've picked up a number of stations. We've picked up, I think, over a dozen stations, many of them putting us on the weekend on replay, but as well as some weekday stations just in the last month. And as we're picking up stations and the program is growing, it's an indication, and I'm talking to the program directors of the stations that are carrying the show, and they're going, we're getting good feedback from people. And I encourage you, if you like the show, to call the radio station and let them know, or call the sponsors and let them know. I've been doing this show on my end without a sponsor from the time we started this until now. And yesterday, I mentioned that a friend of ours, and really and truly, Veronique Reskin is a friend of ours. We've known her for half a decade. We stayed in her home in San Rafael when we visited San Francisco. The last time I spoke at a conference in San Francisco, Louise and I stayed at Veronique's house. And she imports organic wines from France. And I just mentioned on the air in the last few minutes of the show yesterday that she, you know, because it's an imported product and it's French and O'Reilly's doing this whole thing, that she took a 20% hit in sales and that she's giving away free wine if you call this number. You know, it was 888-ECO-WINE. And I'm not doing this as a plug, but I mentioned it and I thought, I want to help out a friend, mention it, maybe people will call. She called me up afterwards and says, this is incredible. My phone has not stopped ringing for an hour, and she's got a bunch of orders, and she wants to talk about sponsoring the show. And it's like this medium of what some people would call liberal talk radio is taking off. It is being successful. It is growing. And we're getting the sponsorship, and we're getting the encouragement and the energy and the resources of several of the unions of organized labor, which we honor and welcome, and many companies that are socially conscious and that say, hey, you know, or even companies that aren't necessarily socially conscious but say, hey, you know, more than half of the people who voted in the 2000 election voted for Al Gore, and if you throw in Ralph Nader, a huge chunk. I mean, 3 million more voted for Nader and Gore than voted for Bush, and that's a huge market. We need to reach out to those people. So, Phil, I'm not giving up. I'm not giving in, and I'm not convinced that the right wingers have any corner on the media. I think the media is trying to be impartial. I think that this issue with Joe Wilson's wife being outed is a very real issue. And I'm going to work on keeping it alive on this program in this medium. And I'm telling you, it is going to be kept alive because it is a real issue. Rush Limbaugh taking pills is a showbiz issue. Valerie Plame being outed, a CIA agent being outed by somebody in the White House, is a crime against our democracy. It's a whole different level of thing. And it's something that I will not tolerate, and I don't think the American people are going to tolerate. And frankly, I think many people in the White House and in the Justice Department are looking at right now and going, we're not going to tolerate this either, and the CIA as well. And if you look at the history of this, when Ulysses S. Grant was president, 1873, his vice president, Schuyler Colfax, took a bunch of stock from the railroads in exchange for giving them free land. Bounced out of office. I mean, it's a terrible scandal, the railroad bribery scandals. Actually, I'm not sure he was bounced out of office, but there was a huge scandal around it. And as a result of that, Grant's own party wouldn't renominate him to run for president when he wanted to run for a third term. Warren Harding, you don't remember 1921, but back in 1921, the Teapot Dome scandal, his Secretary of the Interior took $300,000. To give a couple of oil guys money, access to the National Petroleum Reserve. Spiro Agnew in 73. There's a great piece about this in the History News Network, Center for History and New Media. HNN.US is their website. By Andrew Schockett. Outing Plame is more damaging than all other American scandals. He's an assistant professor of history at Bowling Green State University and a writer for the History News Service. And he talks about this is the first time a president has possibly connived in what was essentially an act of treason, quote unquote. Well, in fact, he goes on to say, not that there's been a shortage of past Oval Office shenanigans. Presidents and their underlings have committed numerous immoral, illegal, or dodgy acts. They've defied the Supreme Court, lied to Congress, and spied on their political enemies. Rascals they may have been, but no former administration betrayed national security and put the lives of American agents in danger for the sake of politics. And Bush, he goes on, Andrew Schockett goes on to point out, defined this whole thing. I mean, he basically gave the marching orders to the folks in the White House by not saying anything about it. Of course, it's not the first scandal. Most of the scandals have had to do with sex. Andrew Grover Cleveland married a 21-year-old, Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky. Andrew Jackson, Secretary of War, was dating a married woman. And that, you know, it led to the resignation of most of Jackson's cabinet in 1831. Andrew Johnson, in 1867, fired the Secretary of War, Edwin Stanton. Congress had passed a law called the Tenure of Office Act, saying, because they knew that Johnson wanted to, he was the guy who became president when Lincoln was assassinated, right? And they knew that he wanted to fire this guy. And so they passed a law saying you can't fire a member of your cabinet. And he fired him anyway. And they impeached him. He came one vote short from being removed from office. You know, a very similar situation to Bill Clinton. And of course, in 1972, you've got Dick Nixon with Watergate. But none of these come to the level of this. Here we are in day 95, according to the folks in our chat room here. You can get to the chat room, by the way, by going to tomhartmann.com and click on the link, and it'll take you to it. And one of the better conversations there. Day 95 of the freedom of Karl Rove since the outing of a CIA agent. How many days is he going to be running around loose? 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Jeff in Denver's on the line. Jeff, welcome to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Hi. I'd like to respond to the previous caller about saying, well, the media doesn't care, so just give up, is basically what he's saying. And it's like, hey, look at right now. The media didn't talk much about the $87 billion. But the people writing in, the response to Congress has been incredible. And a lot of people who said they were going to vote for this $87 billion are now not voting for it because the people organized. It's not about the media.
No, it's not. And, in fact, even the Bill Clinton thing, with Monica, started in the National Enquirer, and it took months to get traction. And largely it got traction because of the right-wing talk machine, as Phil correctly points out.
Yeah, the media doesn't run the show.
No. Ultimately, they don't.
They didn't report on the demonstrations much around the world about the anti-war demonstrations, but there are millions and millions and millions of people showing up.
I think a lot of that is the impact of the Internet, Jeff.
Yes. So what if the media, and it's justice anyway. I don't base my life on what is popular. I don't base my activism on what is popular. So please don't give up. Like Winston Churchill said, or I think it was, never, 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 never give in.
Never give up. Never give up. Never give up. Yes, thank you, Jeff. I appreciate the call. I am right there with you. This is a significant issue. It goes back. Well, I've got another clip here I want to play for you, but we've got another caller, Brain Shrub in North Carolina. Would you rather use your real name or our chat room handle here? Brain Shrub, welcome to the Tom Hartmann Program, and thanks for hanging out and being one of the regulars in our chat room as well.
Oh, thanks, Tom. It's like your show is just such a breath of fresh air that I'm just totally love the show. Listen to it every day. I just wanted to comment about liberals, just throwing up their hands and giving up. I mean, it is just not in the nature of the liberal mind to give up. We didn't give up during the Revolutionary War. We didn't give up during the suffragettes movement. We didn't give up during civil rights. And we sure as heck are not going to give up just because neocons have a misperceived lock on the media right now. Conservatives just frankly aren't as loyal as liberals and progressives are. The minute your show hits the top, Rush Limbaugh's going to lose most of his stuff because, they just look at the numbers. However, liberal sponsors, progressive sponsors will hang on like a pit bull on a branch, because they believe they want to vote with their dollars.
I think what's real is that people on both sides do. I mean, there is a sports element to this. There are some people, and it's probably 10-15% on both sides of all the people who vote Democratic or Republican or progressive or libertarian or whatever in any of these things. Probably about 10 or 15% of the people who vote a particular way actually have signed on to say, this is my team. Right or wrong, I'm with them, and they're going to be there till the bitter end, no matter what. And then everybody else is like, well, this seems like the best team, and I agree with what they're saying, but, you know, if it turns out that they're wrong, I'll change.
Yeah, but you see, I'm agreeing with you 100%, but I think that progressives and liberals are more loyal to our side than the conservatives are on their side. I mean, if you just want to use a really gross example about that, is like, look at all those patriotic corporations who accepted all those contracts from the military and are still refusing to send the mail to our soldiers and are refusing to give them socks. You know, that's the loyalty you can expect from these neoconservative corporations. You know, on our side, on the liberal side, our companies are a lot friendlier, you know, to just the environment and society as a whole. So,
well, on that side, though, what they are loyal to, and it's very real, is they are loyal to their profits.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, that's the bottom line of conservative philosophy is cheap labor, corporate profits, and wealth for the rich. You know, more wealth for the rich. It really boils down in a very simple way. Individual liberty is a code phrase for don't ask us to pay for, you know, paving the public streets and the police and the fire and the public right-of-ways and the commons of the nation and the governance of the nation. Don't ask us to participate in that. Thank you very much. We are free.
Oh, absolutely. And there's such a major desire and a want for good, clean, progressive, and liberal information. You know, my flumpy little website's been getting hit out the wazoo. You know, and it's like...
Is that braintrub.com?
Yeah, just a simple little thing. And I'm getting about 75, 80 hits a day. And I'm not... I mean, it's just... I'm not even making these stories up. So it's like I've been surprised.
Oh, this is the new one that you started with the Daily News Brief thing?
Yeah, the Daily News Scan, the morning news scan goes out. I mean, that list goes to about approximately 250 people now. But on a daily basis, from what I'm looking at my server hits, I'm getting about 75 to 80 new hits a day. And, you know, BrainShrub.com is...
Well, we have a ways to go, BrainShrub. I mean, you got Matt Drudge out there getting over a million a day. So, but wow. Still, I think, you know, it's a good start.
Amen.
It's a good start. Amen. And that's, I mean, we all have to begin at the beginning. And you know, I commend you on a great website and thank you for the call. And, yeah, we need to keep this story going. This, by the way, the distractions from the distractions of the distractions, right? I mean, there is, at this moment, a probe going on in the Security and Exchange Commission into Dick Cheney at Halliburton. You remember that? Well, no, there was a distraction of that. And there is, you know, it just gets deeper and deeper. And this whole, and starting, two wars now, Afghanistan and Iraq, Richard Nixon had some very specific thoughts on whether or not Republicans would ever start a war.
Yes, as a matter of fact, the statement that Senator Kennedy made...
This is from the Nixon-Kennedy debate in 1960.
...was that... to the effect that there were trigger-happy Republicans, that my stand on Kimoi and Matsu was an indication of trigger-happy Republicans.
Whoa, trigger-happy Republicans. Could it be? Is it possible?
I resent that comment. I resent it because it's an implication that Republicans have been trigger-happy and therefore would lead this nation into war.
Oh, no, it would never happen under a Republican. And in fact, it never has happened under a Republican until now. Richard Nixon was quite indignant about that. How a trigger-happy Republican, how dare you? We would never exploit this country for... No.
I would remind Senator Kennedy of the past 50 years. I would ask him to name one Republican president who led this nation into war.
That's Democrats.
There were three Democratic presidents
who led
us into war. I do not mean by that one party is a war party and the other party is a peace party. But I do say that any statement to the effect that the Republican Party is trigger-happy is belied by the record.
Yes, it's simply wrong. Simply wrong. It's belied by the record. Extraordinary. So, day 95 of the Freedom of Karl Rove. And now in the midst of this, we have this war in Iraq. I mean, this is ultimately all about Joe Wilson outing the fact that there was no justification to go to war in the first place. And this is being established over and over and over again. Teddy Kennedy yesterday, the administration has been telling lie after lie. They trumped up reasons for going to war. The trumped up reasons for going to war have collapsed. This administration still refuses to face the truth or tell the truth Ted Kennedy said yesterday. He says, instead, the White House responds by covering up its failures and trying to sell its rosy version of events by repeating it with maximum frequency and volume and minimum regard for realities on the ground. Kennedy goes on to say, our men and women in uniform fought bravely and brilliantly, but the president's war has been revealed as mindless, needless, senseless, and reckless. We should never have gone to war in Iraq when we did, in the way we did, for the false reasons we were given. And this guy is just nailing it. Nailing it. Ted Kennedy, a little upset. And then it gets even stranger. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, Truth in Broadcasting. We'll be back after this break.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Ask how, ask now, ask Sherwin-Williams.
It's the great savings event at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Hurry in and save $6 a gallon on all paints and stains, including Super Paint and Everclean in our new plastic twist and pour container. Plus, save 30 to 64% on all wallpaper. Stop by soon. Sale ends Monday.
Ask how, ask now, ask Sherwin-Williams.
For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Toyota owners, get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at toyota.com/owners.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Yeah?
Have you bought your Halloween candy yet?
Not yet.
Well, I've got the best candy idea for you to give away on Halloween.
Really?
Juicy gummies.
Juicy gummies?
That's right. Juicy gummies are the first gummies made with real fruit juices. They're fat-free and they are so good.
Mmm.
You have to try them all. The peach rings, froggies, creepies, and much, much more. They're all delicious.
Yeah, they are.
Juicy gummies come in playful packages, fun shapes and colors. All the kids will be at your door when the word gets out that you're giving away juicy gummies on Halloween.
Mmm.
Juicy gummies come in 30 and 50 pack bags, so there's plenty of candy for the whole neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And did I mention that these gummy candies are actually made with real fruit juices and fat-free?
Wow.
So if you haven't bought your candy for Halloween, rush on out to Walmart, Kmart, Eckerd's, Dollar General, 7-Eleven, Fred's, Kerr Drugs, Brooks Pharmacy, and many other stores nationwide. Sorry, man, you can't eat all of our samples. Well, this store here sells juicy gummies.
Ooh, thanks.
Look for Juicy Gummies, America's first gummy made with real fruit juices. Boy, they're delicious.
Another audio clip from the production meeting. Doug Steffen.
What production meeting?
The drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys.
Imagine if we really tried.
Yeah.
If we don't care and it shows.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda. I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal!
Anaconda! Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Show.
We have Bob in Texas. It's called Bob. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
You know, it's just wonderful to hear your show. I got the Sirius satellite radio because of this channel, and your show is worth every cent of it.
Well, thank you.
It's really nice to hear a radio show that, for one thing, you don't have to throw things at, you know, after a little while. You're talking about ideas and about historical context of what's going on, and that's so important. You don't hear this kind of intellectual, this level of thought anywhere else on the radio, and I'd sure appreciate it. But the big thing I keep worrying about is we have to, I mean, I think Al Franken's right in that we have to, we've been taking it and we've been taking it, and they've slimed us and slimed us for so many years, and we can't take it anymore.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone, high up in the green mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence, three-star general, General Boykin, says,
one of the most fundamental reasons that they hate us,
Al-Qaeda,
is A, because we are a nation of believers, and B, because we support Israel.
Oh, boy. This guy has stepped in it big time. This is just an extension of what happens when you have essentially irrational leadership. This White House, this administration, has basically handed over the reins of power to two groups, the two groups that put it into power. Number one, large corporate interests. You've got, you know, Condi Rice, who has an oil tanker named after her. You've got Dick Cheney, you know, with Halliburton Inc. You have John Snow of the railroad company. I'm forgetting the name of it. Multimillionaire. If you go through the list of people, I mean, even Colin Powell was on the board of directors of AOL and a stockholder in AOL and Time Warner, and a very wealthy man now. And his son, of course, with the FCC. And it's just so. Anyhow, you've got, on the one hand, you've got these very rich, very wealthy, very corporate connected folks, the corporations that have been working to take over democracy. And then on the other hand, you've got the Jerry Falwells of the world and the Pat Robertsons, who delivered enough votes to George Bush that he could get within shooting range of having a competitive race with Al Gore. I mean, some estimates put it as high as 15 million votes that were delivered to George Bush just by Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell, by their passing out voter guides and their speaking in churches and the TV shows and the radio shows and on and on and on, and their direct mail campaigns. Some think it's even higher than that. And this administration knows that. And so they pander to these two groups, to the extreme right-wing Christians and to the extreme corporate agenda folks who are all in favor of the corporatization of America. And so now, you know, it's coming back to haunt us. We're seeing the corporate corruption that's happening, and we're seeing the takeover of foreign policy by not just ideologues, but religious ideologues. A very dangerous thing in the United States of America. Time to bring a change, and we can do it in November of 2004. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, discussing solutions and not false promises.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Yes, I'm calling about about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Front-running Democratic presidential candidate Howard Dean called for the creation of a $100 billion fund to assist states and local governments in creating jobs, and he offered a plan to close tax loopholes in an appearance at Georgetown University on Thursday. Dean described President Bush's economic policies as Enron economics, saying that Bush had brought the Enron model from Texas to Washington. The Senate defied President Bush on Thursday and voted to convert half his $20.3 billion Iraqi building plan into a loan, dealing the White House an embarrassing foreign policy setback. Despite an administration lobbying blitz that in recent days involved virtually every top administration official, the Republican-run chamber voted 51-47 for a bipartisan proposal making $10 billion of the aid a loan. Its approval by the Senate marked the first congressional vote in opposition to Bush's policies in Iraq. It was also the latest of several setbacks that Congress has dealt him in recent months on issues including concentration of media ownership, new rules on overtime pay, and travel to Cuba. Federal agents raided two Philadelphia City departments and the offices of a lawyer with ties to Mayor John Street on Thursday, 9 days after an FBI bug was discovered in the mayor's office. Agents spent several hours at the three locations. An FBI spokeswoman declined to comment on the raids. Intelligence officials say Al-Qaeda-linked terrorists in Asia have quickly replaced captured leaders with a new operations chief and top bomb makers who are once again plotting deadly attacks in the region. The arrest of Hambali, Osama bin Laden's alleged point man in Asia, and the cracking of a terror ring blamed for bombings in Bali did temporarily disrupt the network, but the leadership vacuum left by Hambali's August 11th arrest was filled within 3 weeks, even as the Islamic militant group carried out a recruiting drive in Indonesia. More after this.
Hi, my name's Maria, and I'm alive today because I was given CPR last year by Rick.
Who took a class with the Red Cross after I received blood from Jamal, who gave blood
after being encouraged by my friend Angela.
Who helped Jamal's whole family get the help and support they needed after losing their home to a fire.
When we come together, we become part of something bigger than us all. By getting involved with the Red Cross, you never know how many people your actions will affect. To get involved, visit redcross.org. The American Red Cross. Together, we can save a life.
A 74-year-old Wisconsin man hit a hole-in-one and bowled a perfect 300 game in a 24-hour span earlier this week. Paul Hughes, a retired business owner, sank the hole-in-one Monday afternoon and bowled the perfect game on Tuesday. Accomplishing both feats is rare, but it's apparently been done before. A South Dakota man is credited with doing the two in July 2000. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Nothing complements a ball game like a bag of roasted peanuts. I like to eat them 3-4 at a time, and I'm talking the jumbo ones, lightly salted and fresh from the shell.
Ah, peanuts, baseball, and the crack of my tooth!
Don't let toothaches interfere with your life. When you can't get to the dentist, get Maximum Strength Ambisol. It contains the same strong pain relief medicine your dentist uses, so it works faster than you can say, ah. Maximum Strength Ambisol. Dentist strong, so the pain is gone. Use as directed.
Fat. Americans are fat. Our children are fat. Our pets are fat. We've become a nation of unhealthy chubbos, thanks largely to the fact that we snarf down too much of too many overfatty foods. In the face of this growing health problem, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association has come out with just what the doctor didn't order. Cheeseburger fries. Yes, strips of deep-fried cheeseburgers. Instead of something lean and light to meet America's nutritional needs, the big beef purveyors have concocted a fat-soaked, calorie-laden new snack item guaranteed to add to our total tonnage. Shaped like oversized French fries, this plump delicacy is made by mushing ground beef and cheese nuggets together, then breading the mixture and plunging the strips into the deep fryer. Just one of these sticks of nutritional dynamite contains about 75 calories and up to 6 grams of fat. But no one eats just one. They generally come 5 to an order. So in one quick setting, you can pump a greasy 375 calories and 30 grams of fat into your bod. Now, I'm certainly no dainty prig of an eater. I grew up eating corn dogs and Frito pies. I just recently enjoyed a batch of deep-fried cheese curds in Minnesota, and nachos with refried beans and cheese are a way of life for me. But there's already plenty of tasty fat in our lives without larding in an extra fatty finger snack. Especially galling is the intention of the beef boys to force their corpulent creation on our children. They're now trying to market cheeseburger fries to public school cafeterias, peddling a version that contains the most fat of all. This is Jim Hightower saying, but kids' nutrition be damned. There's beef to be sold. This is about raw profiteering. As the Beef Association says, we want beef in dessert if we can get it in there. Oh, goody, cheeseburger ice cream coming up next.
See the look on Nancy's face.
What's she doing?
I asked her if she wanted a boogie, and she just gave me this condescending sneer.
Is it the condescending, I don't boogie?
How would I keep up with her
boogieing? Nancy can boogie. Yeah. Doug, I've never seen you dance.
Kind of looks like a frog in a blender.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows than you come home.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, and believers in the American way and democracy all over the planet. Today, day 249 in the search for weapons of mass destruction, day 760 in the search for Osama bin Laden. 336 Americans, 51 Brits, 4 folks from other nations, soldiers on our side. If you want to define sides, I suppose, have died since the commencement of hostilities here in Iraq. An extraordinary situation. And all, it seems, or at least in the mind of George Bush, tracks back to al-Qaeda. Jason Burke is the prize-winning chief reporter for the London Observer. He's covered the Middle East and Southwest Asia for a decade and saw many of the events in Tora Bora and others firsthand. And he's the author of a new book, Al Qaeda, Casting a Shadow of Terror. And Jason's on the line with us from London today, I believe it is, isn't it, Jason?
That's right, in London.
Hey, welcome to the Tom Hartman program, and thanks for getting up in the morning.
Thanks very much for having me on the show. It's great.
Or no, it's the evening there, isn't it?
It is, actually, yeah. It's a quite a nice, sunny evening. A bit cold, but it's quite pleasant there.
Yeah, great. You make the revelation in your book that there's no such thing as... First of all, is the indigenous pronunciation al-Qaeda?
It's al-Qaeda, actually, but that's a bit difficult for kind of the Western general tongue. So, yeah, al-Qaeda is a definitely good version of it.
Yeah. Okay, you say that there's no such thing as al-Qaeda, at least in the sense of what we think al-Qaeda is. You say it's not about being part of a group, it's a way of thinking about the world. Can you
yeah, sure.
Illuminate us?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the one thing I'm saying about it not being, you can't be a member of al-Qaeda is demonstrable in that the there's no membership card, you don't enlist, there's no kind of ritual you go through to become a member of al-Qaeda. The nearest you get is you can swear an oath of allegiance to an individual, and that individual would probably be Osama bin Laden. And we know that a few hundred people did that, but that's only a few hundred people. And the idea of Al-Qaeda as a huge global terrorist network with cells or operatives or sleepers everywhere, all ready to execute the commands of their grand commander Bin Laden up in a hill, in a cave somewhere up a hill, simply doesn't stand up when you look at it. There was something that was sort of close to an organized terrorist group between 1996 and 2001 when they were all based in Afghanistan. That base has now been destroyed. You're looking at something that is far, far more diffuse. It's very amorphous. It involves lots of small groups, lots of different organizations, sometimes just individuals. And really, the only thing they have between them, the only common ground, is a commitment to a similar agenda. And it's that agenda, that ideology, if you like, which is based in a hate for America, a hate for Jews, a hate for the West, a feeling that Islam is under attack, and a willingness to use horrific violence to, in their view, defend it. That's what I see as Al-Qaeda, rather than a tight-knit single group.
Right. It's more like saying that you have a conservative philosophy or a liberal philosophy as opposed to being a member of a particular political party.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a way of looking at the world. Now, a lot of these guys talk to each other, certainly, as you'd expect people with similar views. They help each other out. But that doesn't mean that when Bin Laden says go, everybody jumps. It just doesn't work like that.
Okay, we're speaking with Jason Burke, author of Al-Qaeda, Casting a Shadow of Terror. You mentioned the idea, first of all, just very quickly, the dispersal of this group out of Afghanistan as a result of the invasion of Afghanistan. Has that made them more or less toxic or dangerous to the West?
I'd say it made them more dangerous. What you had before this, the particular period that's crucial for Bin Laden is the late 90s. Before then, you had a whole range of different groups all over the world. You had Algerian terrorist groups who were blowing up people in France. You had Egyptian terrorist groups. You had Jordanian. You had Pakistani, so on and so forth. Now, Bin Laden was able to tie them all together in a way, and he got very close to the Taliban and was able to create this incredible infrastructure for training terrorists and for producing terrorist attacks. That's now gone. So what you've now got is you've got the people who he helped to train, or you've got the people who were in Afghanistan with a very new international perspective, but you've also got all the old groups as well, all the Algerians, all the Jordanians, all these other people around as well. And the other thing you've got now is a really strongly radicalized feeling. There's a feeling that there is a conflict, that there is a war going on, and that this is this is the time to join up and this is the time to fight. And that, all put together, makes it very difficult, makes it very dangerous indeed.
Now, so do you agree then with those who suggested that if we invaded Iraq, it would simply exacerbate feelings in the Muslim world or the Arab world or both, that this was in part a war on Islam or a war of a racial war of some sort against Arabs as well? And be a recruiting, the best recruiting tool that we could give to Al-Qaeda?
I mean, let me say that I was actually for the war, in a sense, because I've been involved with the Kurds in Iraq for quite a long time, and they were all saying to me when I was ever visiting them in northern Iraq, you know, please, please, when are they coming? My argument was that if you go in, you have to be very aware of the risks, and one of those risks, as you rightly point out, is that you'll reinforce this idea that Islam is under assault. And it's key, if you want to get inside the mind of a militant, you have to see that they see themselves as fighting a defensive war. Now, they may be wrong, but that's how they see things. So they look at the attacks or the continuing violence in Kashmir, say, in Chechnya, elsewhere. They look at what happened in Afghanistan, and they see it as an attack on an Islamic nation. They look at what happened in Iraq, and they see that as further confirmation of the fact, in their view, and we know it's not true, but in their view, that America and Britain and other Western nations are committed to humiliating and weakening the Islamic nations. Now, that's a view that, as I say, we know is wrong, but in the Islamic world, it's a view that has great support and increasing support.
Yeah. Jason Burke, the author of Al-Qaeda, Casting a Shadow of Terror. Jason, before
the 9/11 attacks, Osama bin Laden, in his kind of declaration of war against the West, essentially said that his demands were a resolution of the situation with regard to Israel and the Palestinians, and primarily, as I recall, that he wanted the American bases in Saudi Arabia that had been there since the 91 Gulf War to be removed. He wanted infidels off the holy, you know, land of Saudi Arabia. And he at one point said, "You will not have safety and security until we have safety and security." And there are some who have suggested that this is argument about, you know, what's the best way to take this on. If we take it on as a war, then we just create more warriors. On the other hand, if we give in to them, if we say, okay, cool, we're going to help you feel safe and secure, we're going to work to build democracies, we're going to, you know, give you foreign aid or whatever, then we're rewarding them. I mean, is there a middle path here? What's the appropriate response to this?
Yeah,
what is the genesis of it?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a really difficult question. I mean, the way I see it is, you have to have, it's a war, okay, in many ways it's a war. You have to have a military component in a war, obviously. That's what many people would say a war is all about. There are some people who will not be rehabilitated. They will not let themselves be captured. You have to go out and kill them, basically, or at least incapacitate them some way. And if you do that by use of a whole range of slightly dubious measures that are on the boundaries of modern sort of legality or international law, then fine. I don't have a problem with that. But any general who has fought in a irregular warfare or in a regular struggle against guerrillas, against people who see themselves as freedom fighters or terrorists or militants or whatever, anyone who's fighting that kind of asymmetric warfare, as it's known, is aware that history teaches us that hearts and minds have to be won. Now,
yeah, we would say in the United States, you know, people should think back to the American Revolution.
Absolutely. What did the British do wrong? They managed to alienate an entire body of people who weren't necessarily alienated to start with. That's the critical thing. Now, you could say that is conceding to terror. A general, a military man, may well put it in a different way. He'd say it was draining the swamp of support. Now, these are decisions that, you know, politicians make, generals make, and the public make in some way. But all I'd say is that, yes, we have to have a military component, but if you want to win the war long-term, if you want to stop the militants coming through, if you want to remove the threat to us all, which is what, in the end, we want to do, then you have to look at hearts and minds, and you have to win that propaganda battle, you have to win that image battle. Without that, you'll lose the war. You may win the battles, but you'll lose the war.
Right. And speaking of that, and we're speaking with Jason Burke, author of Al-Qaeda, Casting a Shadow of Terror, Army Lieutenant General William G. Boykin. This is the you know, top of the front page headlines here in the newspaper here in the United States, told a church audience that we're fighting a war against Satan and that the Bush administration is supporting those comments. You know, he said that God put George Bush into office. That's why he's the president, even though he got fewer votes than his opponent. He says that even Osama bin Laden isn't our adversary, that it's actually Satan, and that our God, quoting him, what he calls the Judeo-Christian God, is bigger, to quote him, than the Islamic God. Is this story getting traction in Europe, and what kind of impact do you think it's going to have in the Arab world?
I think it reinforces many of the misperceptions about America. And I'm a great friend of America. I think America has a very, very bad press, and has done recently. Hugely grateful for everything that America's done for us in Britain and in Europe over the last 50, 60 years and before. It reinforces all the bad perceptions about America in Europe. I mean, we are a very secular society here on the whole and do not see things in religious terms like that. In the Arab world, the great problem, and this is what gives such help to the militants, is that they see this as a religious struggle. They see it as a battle to the death between good and evil. They see it as a battle to the death between one civilization and another civilization. Now, I have many friends in the Islamic world, many Muslims who are, you know, I get on with very well. They're as much friends to me as anybody here. And to suggest that there's some kind of instant enmity or hostility between the Islamic world and the Western world is incredibly dangerous. And to put it in terms of Satan and our God is bigger than their God, A, shows to me a very odd theological reading of the origins of Islam, Judaism, and Christianity. Theologians will tell you how all three are supposedly variants on a similar religion as it came out of the Middle East in a certain period and so on and so forth. But also is just incredibly counterproductive. I mean, it just will not help to have people saying that. It reinforces all the sorts of perceptions that we need to counter if we want to win this struggle and make ourselves and our societies safe.
I agree. We're speaking with Jason Burke, author of Al-Qaeda, Casting a Shadow of Terror. We'll be back after this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Looking for a different way to get relief from sore muscles or achy joints? Now you can get fast, targeted relief from a name you trust. Try new Bare Muscle and Joint Cream. It targets the pain precisely. Just rub it in right where it hurts. New Bare Muscle and Joint Cream actually increases circulation at the site of pain to soothe that achy soreness fast. Take aim at the pain with a name you trust. Try new Bare Muscle and Joint Cream and get moving again, pain-free. Use as directed.
Is downing Metamucil for regularity getting you down?
It's too hard to take.
But you must.
It's thick and icky, gloppy and gritty. I cannot.
Next time, try FiberCon. It's a better way to stay regular because just two caplets and a refreshing glass of water is all you need to get the same results as Metamucil powder.
FiberCon! Oh, FiberCon! You're refreshing easier to take.
Use only as directed.
Hi, Tom Baudet for Motel6.com. Next time you're goofing around on the internet, you know, in other words, the next time you're at work, click on over to Motel6.com for Click 6 Web Bargains. Those are special discounts at hundreds of locations that you can only get when you book online. Just look for the Click 6 icon at Motel6.com and then get back to work. I'm Tom Baudet, and we'll leave the light and the modem on for you. And a core hotel.
Americans are fat. Our children are fat. Our pets are fat. We've become a nation of unhealthy chubbos, thanks largely to the fact that we snarf down too much.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
What does most political talk radio sound like?
Good morning and welcome to my show. I'm fine. Thanks for asking.
A little self-centered.
We're not going to take any calls right now because I want to talk. Remember, the show is at its best when it's more me and less of you.
Not very listener friendly.
We're talking about all the progress we've made in Iraq. Tom and Seattle, you're on the air. Make it quick.
Yeah, I don't really agree with what you said about...
And I don't agree with you calling my show. Let's get it clear, people. If you don't agree with me, then you must be a communist.
A little one-sided.
The fact is that the Dixie Chicks should be sent to Iraq to live in a with Osama. Jeff in California, you're on the air. Make it quick.
I have a comment on how the U.S. has completely forgotten about Osama bin Laden.
No, you don't have a comment, Jeff, but what you do have is the privilege to listen to my show, and you're abusing it, and I am offended.
All around bad radio.
Says you.
But there is an alternative.
What?
You can get the best of progressive talk radio on the only progressive talk radio network there is, IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to IEAmericaRadio.com.
You'll be back.
No, they won't.
Yes, they will.
Get out of here.
Don't touch me.
Look, if you had the chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued
by
them.
I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
I hate you, kidding? I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Jason Burke, the author of Al-Qaeda, Casting a Shadow of Terror. Jason is the prize-winning chief reporter for the London Observer, has covered the Middle East and Southwest Asia for a decade and saw many of the key events in Tora Bora and others firsthand. Jason, Britain historically has been no stranger to terrorist attack. Guy Fawkes Day commemorates a terrorist attack on Parliament. You've also gone through periods of religious fanaticism, the Oliver Cromwell regime. Has Britain's past affected differently its mindset on terrorism when compared to the United States, and certainly your experience with the IRA and that?
Yeah, I was going to say that. I mean, I can remember when I was sort of 11 or 12. I was older than that, actually. I was mid-teens, hearing bombs in London, and visitors to London still ask why there are no rubbish bins on the tube, the metro. And the reason is because people put bombs in them, or they certainly used to. So we didn't suffer in the way that America did on September the 11th, there was less of a visceral shock to our systems. We had become very used to terrorism, seeing it as something that we could live with. Our homeland wasn't seen as unviolated in the way that I felt Americans or American friends.
Well, do you think, Jason, that I would be correct in saying that perhaps your politicians didn't exploit the opportunity quite as efficiently as George Bush did?
I don't know. I mean, you know better than I. But I mean, my feeling about Bush was it was a genuine. I mean, he reacted in a sort of genuine way. It was just, a genuine way that was. That many people had issues with. I'm not sure if it was kind of deliberately exploitative. I think maybe some of the people around him were certainly deliberately exploitative in terms of an agenda that they've been trying to push for a long time and then saw the opportunity to do so, particularly on Iraq.
Well, when he gives speeches to his donors, when he does his $1 million a night fundraisers, he's done, I think, 70 of them now, raised $70 million, he makes a joke about how, and it always draws a laugh from his conservative audiences, about how he was elected without a mandate. He had a minority in the, he had a half million fewer votes than Al Gore did. He had an economy that was in trouble. He was facing challenges in Congress. He had just lost over the education issue. He had lost control of the Senate when Jim Jeffords of Vermont changed from Democrat to independent. And he said, and then 9/11 happens, and then there's a pause, and he says, and I told Mitch Daniels, I hit the trifecta.
Mm.
In other words, he won all three races, at the same time. And I think there's a widespread sentiment in the United States that there was a moment there of a few weeks when the entire world was on our side, and that we could have used that moment to bring the world together and perhaps hunt down these folks as criminals. Using the criminal system, the criminal justice system that exists throughout the planet, but instead we chose to demonize them and militarize this, and the results may not have been as appropriate or as healthy. I suspect that you disagree with that.
No, I don't. I mean, I agree with much. I certainly one of the great failures, if you like, the military successes you can argue about, but. An undoubted failure has been the shift from being the subject of so much genuine sympathy. And the French papers were, Le Monde, the very conservative French paper, had on its front page the slogan, "We are all Americans now." And there was a genuine and profound sympathy around the whole world, including much of the Islamic world, for America after September the 11th. And that has been entirely turned round into levels of anti-Americanism that have not been seen, certainly in my lifetime.
Ever. Yeah, I don't think ever. And Jason, there's a lot of people here who are thinking. Jason, we're coming up against a break here, and I have to thank you for being on the program today. I very much appreciate it. I recommend your book to people. Jason Burke, author of Al-Qaeda, Casting a Shadow of Terror. Thank you again for being with us. This is Tom Hartman. On the IE America Radio Network, stay tuned. We'll be back after this break.
does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Young Americans don't know much about geography, but the tools that could help them learn are getting better all the time. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. A recent survey sponsored by National Geographic found a lot of ignorance about the layout of the world among 18 to 24-year-old Americans. For example, 30% of them could not locate the Pacific Ocean on a map. Bill Stair is the former president of National Geographic Maps.
11% of young citizens of the United States can't even locate the United States on a map. More young people in the United States know where the island featured in last season's TV show Survivor, where it's located, than can find Israel on a map. And, you know, to understand what's going on in the world, we have to know something about it.
Sweden, Germany, and Italy scored highest among those surveyed. Stair says those countries place more emphasis on travel and the study of language and geography. But he says Americans have plenty of opportunity to learn about the world because the tools to do so are getting better all the time. Information and images collected from satellites make it possible to add detail to maps like never before. Stair says a lot of that information is readily available, both on the Internet and in books. For example, he says the new edition of the National Geographic World Atlas for Young Explorers includes up-to-date satellite imagery designed to catch the eye of even today's most video-dependent kids. Stair says parents need to get these kinds of brightly illustrated books into their homes. He says they should leave them out in plain view, maybe next to the TV remote control, where their children can easily pick them up and browse. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's Tom Hartman exposing the OxyContin and conservative, talking to you, truth in broadcasting, here on the IE America Radio Network. The Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence. And just an absolutely incredible quote. He said to his audience of George Bush, "Why is this man in the White House?
The majority of Americans did not vote for him. Why is he there? And I tell you this morning that he's in the White House because God put him there for a time such as this. And I'm telling you, there's a lot of people out there who actually believe that. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Billy in California's on the line. Hey, Billy, what are your thoughts on this? How do you think that we should most appropriately respond to terrorism?
Well, I'm going to respond this way. I got a pop quiz for you. What Al-Qaeda member or what terrorist said the following thing? You know, the Europeans killed 6.5 million out of 12 million Jews, but somehow the Jews are still running the world. They get other people to die for them. You know, we Muslims are 1.5 billion, and we need to find a, quote, final victory. What Al-Qaeda member or terrorist said?
Yeah, of course, it was the president of what you call it, Malaysia yesterday, or the day before yesterday.
You've got to be wrong. How could a president of a country actually dare to say such a thing?
Well, because that's what the level of discourse has gone to. I mean, as Jason, what's his name, the author of that book that we were just talking to, Jason Blair, I want to say, it's Jason Burke, pointed out, and this has been what I've been saying from day one. I wrote an op-ed piece about this on Common Dreams that, you know, right after 9/11. In fact, I wrote two of them. That had we said, okay, we have been attacked by criminals. These people are criminals. They have committed a crime, and we need to go after them with all of the weight of the worldwide Interpol criminal justice system and expose to the world what criminals they are. The entire world would have turned against Osama bin Laden, even his own people. But instead, George Bush started talking about good versus evil, about going on a crusade, and what he did was he totally polarized the situation. Talk about a divider, not a uniter. Totally polarized the situation, and has thrown the entire Muslim world, the entire Islamic world, which is, as the president of Malaysia correctly points out, over 1 billion people, against us, against not just against Jews, although specifically that's always been the main battle going on there, but against anything that has to do with Western.
Well, exactly, because it's
culture.
Not Israel that Mahathir was saying we have to defeat. It was Jews, all Jews, you know, the ones running the world. Getting other people to fight and die for them?
Jews? That's their wacky paranoia, and that paranoia is being fed by the way that George Bush is behaving, in my opinion.
Oh, sure, absolutely. But, you know, this sort of is the one big failure for me on the left lately, is the unbelievable support for the Palestinians versus the Israelis. You know, just because the Israelis have tanks and look like they're the top dog, make no mistake, the final victory is still desired by 1 billion Muslims.
Yeah. Oh, I know, and I have, you know, this. It's interesting that you bring this up, Billy, because I have not discussed this topic on this radio program before, and because it's the kind of thing that you go near it and you really have to, you know, it's like touching the third rail. It's electric, and people have very, very strong opinions on this. I have spent a lot of time in Israel. I have been in the Arab world. I've spent a lot of time in the Middle East over the last 20 years. And there is no doubt in my mind that there are an extraordinary, mind-boggling number of Arabs who, well, I mean, the PLO, just until recently, it was an article of their constitution that they were dedicated to the destruction, the total destruction of the state of Israel.
Well, that's why we've never had a settlement of this problem. You can't have a settlement when it's not, and this is the
point. Well, see, I think
it's
that's half of it.
It's not about property.
I think that's half of it.
It's not about the right of return.
Well, yes, and I also think that Sharon is going about this wrong. I think he's making the same mistake that George Bush is making.
Oh, sure, absolutely. But what do you do in the face of a Saudi Arabia that refers to the Barbie doll as the Jew doll?
Yeah.
It's about hatred.
Well,
it's not about you
try to bring about cultural change.
Yeah. How? When even the left in America doesn't get it.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the big challenges is you know, I would say that bringing about cultural change, the opportunity that we have had and that we haven't fulfilled in the last 40 years has been the opportunity to work together with Israel to help a democratic Palestine emerge out of the remnants of the Palestinians. And
well,
had that happened.
As we all know, what the problem is now is it's the civil war. It's the moderate Palestinians have to find a way to get the radicals gone.
Well, and there's that battle is going on inside Israel as well.
And in Israel, they have to get out of the settlements. Have to.
Yeah.
Have to.
Yeah. Yeah, we're
so that's why I don't understand why it's so tough. It's pretty clear what has to be done on both sides.
Well, it's so tough because there are all these constituencies that are pandering to each other and playing to each other. And I mean, one of my very best friends in the world lives in one of those settlements in Israel. And I've been there and I've stayed in his home. And it is, you know, they were encouraged 15 years ago by the government to move into this place, said, you know, hey, it's cheap housing. If you want to have a house in Jerusalem, it's going to cost you $300,000-$400,000. You can have a whole house out here in the settlement for $30,000. I mean, you know, a lot of people just couldn't turn that down. And they weren't thinking about geopolitics, and then suddenly they find themselves in the middle of a war.
At this point, the greater good needs to be served.
Yeah, I agree. And it's a mess, and it's going to be a very expensive mess. But there are no simple answers, in my opinion. There are no simple answers other than.
So I want to actually ask any companies like the one my wife works for, Intel, one of the biggest, most successful companies in the world, to get the hell out of Malaysia and stop making this monster, who they call a prime minister, a success.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Bush is meeting with him in a couple of days, he's going to be in a meeting that this guy is also in, and it'll be interesting to see if Bush boycotts that or not.
Wouldn't it be amazing if something horrible happened to the two of them?
Pardon?
I said if something horrible happened to the two of them during their meeting, it wouldn't be a big loss for the world.
God forbid. God forbid, Billy.
Yeah,
thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Always appreciate your calls. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Our number is 1-800-TALK. Yes, it's 19 minutes before the hour, and John in Long Beach, California is on the line. John, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Good morning, Tom. Well, you know, I don't know if I brought this up to you before or not, but the situation where we find ourselves now, and I know this probably sounds ludicrous on the face of it, but I think part of it can be traced right back to Pat Robertson.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely agree.
Now, the reason I say it is because when he got his butt kicked, when he ran for president, and he got his butt kicked, he said, I don't know the words verbatim.
But we're going to take over the Republican Party.
He said, we're going to start a grassroots movement that's going to take over, the Republican Party, get rid of the moderates. In so many words. Now, that's not only what he did that nobody seemed to pay much attention to. But what really scared me was during I don't know if it was during the primaries or when Bush was running against Gore, but there was a meeting between Bush and Robertson that lasted for more than an hour. And when they came out of the meeting, they both had these great big smiles on their face and their arms around one another. I don't know if you remember that or not.
I don't. When was this?
This was just prior to the election.
I see, in 2000.
Yeah, when Bush was going around, you know, trying to get people behind him. Now,
Robertson was working for him.
Yeah, now people might say...
Not working for him, I mean working in to help him get him elected.
Yeah, now people might say, well, if Robertson had such a big hand in all this, how come he doesn't have any more power than he has? Well, what people forget is this. Oftentimes, the person who helps or creates the monster is not the one that controls it.
Well, and I don't think that it would be accurate to say that Pat Robertson doesn't have power. He has mind-boggling wealth and I think tremendous power.
I'm talking about political power, though. He doesn't.
Well, I'm talking about that, too. I think that the Republican Party lives in fear of what Pat Robertson could do to them if he decided to pull his support.
But see, how many people now, even the media... Left or right, how many people have broached this subject lately of Pat Robertson and his role in all of this?
Well, see, this is one of the what makes this timely, John, is that very recently Pat Robertson suggested that the State Department should be blown up with a nuclear weapon. Now, if you were to suggest that on this radio program, even I can pretty much guarantee you that one of us would be receiving a phone call from the FBI or the Secret Service, you know, within minutes, and that if you had suggested that you wouldn't be sitting there talking to me very much longer.
Well, I know,
and yet. You know, this guy did it on national television multiple times.
Back in the interjector, I know what would happen. I look outside my window, and all of a sudden there'd be a bunch of, what's the new tanks called?
Yeah.
And
yeah, he'd be, you know, Randy Weaver all over again.
Yeah, and it'd be helicopters, Black Hawk helicopters flying around my place. I know. I mean, they just come in and kick my door in. One other thing, if I may. I've been having an argument with some person who is all for Bush and everything. And he says, well, what's your problem? If you're not doing anything wrong, why should you worry? Have they kicked in your door yet? And this person, and I pointed this out, you don't seem to realize if you wait until your enemy kicks in your door, then it's too late.
Yeah, it's the Pastor Niemeyer paradox, you know, of first they came for the Jews, and I wasn't a Jew, so I didn't. And then they came for the trade unionists. Absolutely. We have to stand up to this. John, thank you for the call. I appreciate your sharing those things, those points. Very well taken. And it'd be interesting to see how this thing plays out with Pat Robertson. I have a feeling it's just going to go nowhere. Jim in Knoxville, Tennessee, or driving through Knoxville, Tennessee, is on the line. 1-800-TALK-YES. Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, can you hear me, sir?
I certainly can.
Okay. Actually, I have 4 points I'd like to make. First one is more rhetorical because you and I agree. And the first one is that this thing with this releasing of the name and then lack of Wilson's wife and then the slow pace that they're taking, that by itself rakes high crimes and misdemeanors.
That is an impeachable offense if George Bush has anything to do with it or any knowledge of it, or if by delaying tactics he has impeded the investigation of it. That is an impeachable offense. That is treason or something close to it, to quote his father. Yes, I agree.
Yes, and then number two, you broached on the subject of the anthrax. Now, and the fact that it was interesting that Leahy and Daschle sitting on the committee of the where they were talking about the Homeland Defense.
Yeah, the Patriot Act.
And the Patriot Act. But here's something else that I thought about, and I started talking about this last year, and then something happened, and my wife told me to please keep my mouth shut. There was something. You stop and think about it. Jeffries had become an independent, swinging the House or the Senate back to the Democrats. We had at least four letters we know went out. Two to Tom Brokaw on New York Post, and they were one type of letter telling them to get to the doctors because they'd been exposed. But then the other two letters, which was Leahy and Daschle, they were the ones with the aerosol.
Yeah, and the letters said something like "You're all dead now" or whatever.
Right. Now my point is this was not random. If they could have even, disabled them, you would have had two people living in conservative states who, and if I'm not mistaken, their governors are Republican. You would have had two Republicans replacing them, throwing definitely back into the Republicans the control of the Senate.
Well, that's an interesting point. I don't recall which. I think it was the 2002 elections that Howard Dean stopped being our governor and became a presidential candidate. Pat Leahy was from Vermont.
Right. And the thing about this is, then my third point, and this is kind of interesting to me. It's interesting, nothing but interesting. Remember Pat Buchanan? How he took over the Reform Party and effectively took them out, which gave George W. no competition in the primaries or in the general election.
Yeah, they learned their lesson from the Ross Perot experience with his father.
That's right. And where's Pat Buchanan and the $12 million today?
Remember,
he got
$12
million
smiling
matching
in Hawaii.
Federal funds.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, that was my major points.
Okay, thank you, Jim. I appreciate that, and good points as always. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937, and we have Joe in Brookings, Oregon, on the line. Joe, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, well, Billy seems to be confused about why there's so much hatred for Israel over there. It might have something to do with the fact we're over there giving Israel $4 billion in military aid every single year. you know.
But we're giving almost an equal amount, Joe, to Egypt.
No, it ain't as much as we give to Israel, and as many years as we've been giving it to Israel. The fact of the matter is, if Israel wants to finish their business with Syria or whatever, I wouldn't care. It's just that we, you know, we seem to get drawn into this sort of stuff also, and we would do our best to help the situation along for peace in the Middle East. We would get the hell out, let them settle it between themselves. That's the way I feel about it. And you'll notice we've been throwing money all around there in the Middle East for however many years we've been doing it. We aren't any closer to peace over there in the Middle East than the day we started getting involved.
Yeah, you make a good point, Joe. And it would be interesting to see what would happen if we did withdraw all foreign aid in the Middle East. It's not going to happen, and I'm not sure that it's the best thing. But it's an interesting point to speculate about. Joe, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison instead of right-wing think tanks. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Toyota owners, get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at Toyota.com/owners.
The great savings event at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Hurry in and save $6 a gallon on all paints and stains, including Super Paint and Everclean in our new plastic twist and pour container. Plus, save 30 to 64% on all wallpaper. Stop by soon. Sale ends Monday. Ask Sherwin-Williams. For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817. The Washington Monthly.
We have this representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector!
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, helping you with your pets and talking to celebrities, like from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies, Raven Simone. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out, so he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Dolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All they need is love.
Animal Talk, Saturdays and Sundays on the IE America Radio Network.
The Mike Molloy Show.
According to the GAO report, many items needed to establish a laboratory for making biological warfare agents were being sold on the internet to the public from the Department of Defense's excess property inventory for pennies on the dollar. So the next time the Bush crime family says, well, it's time to invade, oh, let me close my eyes, spin me around, okay, let me point, Syria! Because they have weapons of mass destruction.
This is so much fun. Spin me around again.
Iran!
Oh, I love this game. Uncle Dick, can I play this game so much?
The next time we do that, is it not incumbent upon us to ask where they got the equipment that they used to make weapons of mass destruction?
Fastag says $27 billion. It's yours for $1.29.
The Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the vast radical metal conspiracy. Take no imitations. This is Tom Hartman of the IE America Radio Network, Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence. That's the guy who is in charge of he's basically in charge of our intelligence forces against. I thought that there was a nice little summary, but here it is. Highly decorated general who is one of the leaders of a secretive new Pentagon unit. This is from NBC. Formed to coordinate intelligence on terrorists and help hunt down Osama bin Laden, Saddam Hussein, and other high-profile targets. Okay. This guy says he's doing a slideshow. And he shows a picture of Osama bin Laden. And he says, he asks his audience rhetorically, well, is he the enemy? And then he clicks to the next slide, and it's a picture of Saddam Hussein. And he says, is this man the enemy? And then he turns to the audience, and he says, the enemy is none of these people I have shown you here. The enemy is a spiritual enemy. He's called the Principality of Darkness. The enemy is a guy called Satan. Now, I would submit to you that he is welcome to his beliefs. And, in fact, I would encourage him in his beliefs. But when somebody is a high government official, particularly the number one guy who's in charge of tracking down bin Laden and Saddam, and they go out in public and say, bin Laden and Saddam aren't the real enemies, that they are putting, that he is putting this nation at risk. He further went on to say, they're after us because we're a Christian nation. And there are Hindu and Buddhist nations that are under siege. I mean, look at Bali from Islamic fundamentalists as well. Reality contradicts the good general. So what does the Defense Department say about this? Well, Donald Rumsfeld says, and I quote, he's an officer that has an outstanding record in the United States Armed Forces. So the AP asks General Richard Myers, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, you know, what about this? And he says, well, he did not think that Boykin broke any military rules by giving talks at churches. And then Rumsfeld says, we're free people. That's the wonderful thing about our country. Can't stop people from speaking out. Yeah, try telling that to the troops who spoke out to ABC News, said they had a problem. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person?
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, fellow Americans. This is Laura Picklesbush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. The Senate defied President Bush on Thursday and voted to convert half his $20.3 billion Iraqi building plan into a loan, dealing the White House an embarrassing foreign policy setback. Despite an administration lobbying blitz that in recent days involved virtually every top administration official, the Republican-run chamber voted 51-47 for a bipartisan proposal making $10 billion of the aid a loan. Its approval by the Senate marked the first congressional vote in opposition to Bush's policies in Iraq. It was also the latest of several setbacks that Congress has dealt him in recent months on issues including concentration of media ownership, new rules on overtime pay, and travel to Cuba. Front-running Democratic presidential candidate Howard Dean called for the creation of a $100 billion fund to assist states and local governments in creating jobs, and he offered a plan to close tax loopholes in an appearance at Georgetown University on Thursday. Dean described President Bush's economic policies as Enron economics, saying that Bush had brought the Enron model from Texas to Washington. Intelligence officials say al-Qaeda-linked terrorists in Asia have quickly replaced captured leaders with a new operations chief and top bomb makers who are once again plotting deadly attacks in the region. The arrest of Hambali, Osama bin Laden's alleged point man in Asia, and the cracking of a terror ring blamed for bombings in Bali did temporarily disrupt the network, but the leadership vacuum left by Hambali's August 11th arrest was filled within 3 weeks, even as the Islamic militant group carried out a recruiting drive in Indonesia. Federal agents raided two Philadelphia city departments and the offices of a lawyer with ties to Mayor John Street on Thursday, 9 days after an FBI bug was discovered in the mayor's office. Agents spent several hours at the three locations. An FBI spokeswoman declined to comment on the raids. More after this.
Hi, my name's Maria, and I'm alive today because I was given CPR last year by Rick,
who took a class with the Red Cross after I received blood from Jamal, who gave blood
after being encouraged by my friend Angela,
who helped Jamal's whole family get the help and support they needed after losing their home to a fire.
When we come together, we become part of something bigger than us all. By getting involved with the Red Cross, you never know how many people your actions will affect. To get involved, visit redcross.org. The American Red Cross. Together, we can save a life.
A supermarket rat that had dodged a number of poison traps got its comeuppance when an 80-year-old shopper knocked it unconscious after it tried to steal her cheese, a Belgian daily said on Thursday. The rat had been hiding in the supermarket for a month, but staff attempts to trap the rodent had repeatedly failed. The woman reportedly felt a sharp pain and noticed the rat hanging from her finger and slammed it to the floor. For IE American Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Toyota owners, get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at toyota.com/owners.
Fat. Americans are fat. Our children are fat. Our pets are fat. We've become a nation of unhealthy chubbos, thanks largely to the fact that we snarf down too much of too many overfatty foods. In the face of this growing health problem, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association has come out with just what the doctor didn't order. Cheeseburger fries. Yes, strips of deep-fried cheeseburgers. Instead of something lean and light to meet America's nutritional needs, the big beef purveyors have concocted a fat-soaked, calorie-laden new snack item guaranteed to add to our total tonnage. Shaped like oversized French fries, this plump delicacy is made by mushing ground beef and cheese nuggets together, then breading the mixture and plunging the strips into the deep fryer. Just one of these sticks of nutritional dynamite contains about 75 calories and up to 6 grams of fat. But no one eats just one. They generally come 5 to an order. So in one quick setting, you can pump a greasy 375 calories and 30 grams of fat into your bod. Now, I'm certainly no dainty prig of an eater. I grew up eating corn dogs and Frito pies. I just recently enjoyed a batch of deep-fried cheese curds in Minnesota, and nachos with refried beans and cheese are a way of life for me. But there's already plenty of tasty fat in our lives without larding in an extra fatty finger snack. Especially galling is the intention of the beef boys to force their corpulent creation on our children. They're now trying to market cheeseburger fries to public school cafeterias, peddling a version that contains the most fat of all. This is Jim Hightower saying, but kids' nutrition be damned. There's beef to be sold. This is about raw profiteering. As the Beef Association says, we want beef in dessert if we can get it in there. Oh, goody, cheeseburger ice cream coming up next.
Yes, she is. Thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really, Nancy?
Fun chi la is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Fun chi la.
You know everything. I should have watched MSNBC.
You should have.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need's a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back, friends, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. The pension guarantee, or Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, PBGC, is a federal agency that was set up to protect the pensions of workers all around the country. And it's supposed to be overseeing organizations, companies, corporations. Presumably there are nonprofits as well and unions or whatever who have pension. Anybody who's got a pension, the PBGC is supposed to overlook it. Federal agency, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. And here we got the situation where this company called RTI Steel had for 15 months been trying to avoid paying pensions to their 20 to 30 year long employees because the company was going through Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And they said, we shouldn't have to pay pensions. But they had contracts that said they had to pay pensions, and they had the money to pay the pensions. And the PBGC was forcing them, LTV Steel in Cleveland, they had done that, and now it was RTI, to pay the pensions. And then George Bush fires the director of the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation and appoints a conservative ideologue, Stephen Kandarian, as the leader of the agency, of the PBGC. And immediately Kandarian says, "You guys don't have to pay any pensions to anybody. Don't worry about that." In an article, Court Upholds Pension Rights by Bruce Bostic, he says it has been an extremely difficult month, 15 months for the RTI workers. Five RTI workers committed suicide after the PBGC stole their pensions. The first worker to do so, Jay Schroeder, had 29 years of service. He was the brother of the Schroeder boy who was killed by the National Guard at Kent State in 1969. Is that for an irony? Augie Waldron, 28 years steel worker. He had worked for 28 years, not he was 28 years old. He had worked as a steel worker for 28 years and had a pension coming to him. Dropped dead in October 2002 after reading his mail, which stated that the company was cutting off his medical benefits. He'd been slated to testify at a special hearing with Representative Sherrod Brown, Democrat of Ohio. When Bush appointed this guy, Kandarian, his first official act struck these steelworkers. And not just RTI, also in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Indiana, Illinois, New York, and Hamilton, Ontario. Boom. Don't have to pay. And the USWA, a union there, launched a campaign. Lawsuits were filed. There was a bunch of rallies. There was one in Youngstown, Ohio, where they actually shut down. 1,000 steelworkers showed up and shut down traffic. Hundreds of motorcyclists roaring around the courthouse. City councils all over the country passed resolutions in support of workers. Local representatives sent letters. And finally, it looks like this has been resolved just last month, just a few weeks ago. Judge Peter Economos, interesting name, ruled that the PBGC, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, and its right-wing ideologue leader appointed by George Bush, Stephen Kandarian, had acted illegally when they refused to pay pensions to these steelworkers. So the union's lawsuit has been apparently successfully litigated. Now, it'll be interesting to see if there's an appeal on that. But the question that this raises, this kind of a story, I use this as an example. The question that this kind of a story raises is, how is it that our political system has been so corrupted by ideology that our system of governance serves now only the largest and wealthiest of the corporations and of those who have derived the greatest benefits from democracy and free enterprise and capitalism, and mocks or harms or ignores at various times one of those three, those who are not at the top of the pyramid? I hear conservatives all the time talking about tax burden. They love putting the word burden after the word tax. Paying taxes is a privilege. It's a privilege to live in this nation. It is a privilege to be part of a society where we all pay into it and we all benefit from it. Yeah, of course, nobody wants to pay more taxes than are necessary. Nobody wants to pay taxes to support things that they, you know, everybody can disagree with something about the tax code or the way taxes are spent. Yeah, of course, me too. But burden? We're going to relieve the burden on the wealthy. Now, they are the greatest beneficiaries of this system. They have also, along with that, the greatest obligation to return something to it, to help support the system that gave them the opportunity and provided the infrastructure the legal infrastructure, the economic infrastructure for them to gain that wealth. So how is it that our political debate in America has been replaced with paid-for commercial spots and soundbite slogans? How is it that the whole idea of political dialogue in America has disintegrated to the point where even discussions about really serious issues like taxes are boiled down to three-word soundbites and bumper sticker slogans? Is it because, as those on the right and some on the left charge, that Americans are getting stupid? I don't think so. I think there is something to be said for the idea that people are working more and more hours for lower and lower pay as the middle class gets hollowed out in the United States by the trade policies of this administration. And they just don't have the time to spend reading the newspaper and educating themselves as people did in previous times when you could raise a family successfully, put kids through college, pay the medical bills, no matter what, with the income from a good union job that you could get with a high school diploma. Now, the conservatives have exported all of those jobs overseas, much to their benefit, and much to the destruction of both democracy and the middle class in the United States. But what does this say about our political debate? And we're seeing these debates now among the Democrats, for example. Actually, there's been some pretty good moments where it's been more than just sound bites. But you know, that's Democrats. It's interesting if you look at the history of these things. From 1976. I mean, we could go back to the Lincoln-Douglas debates, but really we got formal about it in the 70s here at a national level. The presidential debates from 1976 to 1984 were run by the League of Women Voters, and they were nonpartisan. They included independent candidates. Remember John Anderson? And he participated in one of the national debates funded by the League of Women Voters, those of you who are old enough to remember that. They prohibited major party campaigns from manipulating the debate formats. They said, hey, this is the way it is. Take it or leave it. Very much like the 1960 debate, you know, was between Nixon and Kennedy. Pretty straightforward, you know, okay. The old debating rules. Here's the topic. Let's talk about it. You can refute. What do you have to say about that? A genuine debate. Then in 1987, we got the Commission on Presidential Debates out of the Reagan administration. This Commission on Presidential Debates replaced the League of Women Voters. In fact, the League said, the League of Women Voters is withdrawing its sponsorship of the presidential debates because the demands of the two campaign organizations would perpetrate a fraud on the American voter. It has become clear to us that the candidates' organizations aim to add debates to their list of campaign trail charades devoid of substance, spontaneity, and answers to tough questions. The League has no intention of becoming an accessory to the hoodwinking of the American public. So the Commission on Presidential Debates comes along, and they say that they were established in 1987 to ensure that the debates provide the best possible information to viewers and listeners. But they're run by the Democratic and Republican parties. The co-chairmen when this thing was started, Fahrenkopf and Kirk, were the former heads of the RNC and the DNC. Oh, maybe they're the co-chairman right now. I'd have to double-check my facts here. They're corporate-sponsored. Most of the board members have close ties to multinational corporations. The debates are funded through tax-deductible corporate contributions. And the debates themselves are carnivals of corporate marketing. They limit the debates. The rules for third-party contenders are decided in closed-door conferences. And you have softball-prescripted questions and answers, like a glorified news conference. They limit spontaneity. I have a real problem with this. I don't think that this is serving democracy. It does provide a few funny moments. Here is the Ross Perot's Jim Stockdale, his vice president, vice presidential candidate from that debate. Here he.
Am I? Why?
Well,
who am I? Why am I here?
Yeah, and it was a question that apparently nobody really ever asked.
As candidates, How does it look from your viewpoint? And are these tactics really necessary? Admiral Stockdale, it's your turn to go.
You know, I didn't have my hearing aid turned on. Tell me again.
Yes. So, there was a small problem, you could say, with those debates back then. And then you've got, like, the McNeil-Lehrer news hour. Actually, I'm going to play that clip after the break because it runs more than a few seconds. But we have had this situation where debate, political debate in America, is either down to who can shout the loudest on TV or on radio and shout down the other person on the one hand, or absolute pablum of no substance. Not to say that shouting has any substance. In fact, it rarely does. But it's like these two theatrical extremes, both in the spectrum or in the realm of let's not really talk about serious issues. And we really need to be changing this. This is one of the things that I think that we really need to be paying attention to is what can we do to further and to enhance the possibility of actual discussion and debate among the candidates. And the bottom line for me is that we have to start holding them accountable and demanding of them some response, some high level of responsivity or responsiveness. This is Tom Hartman, News Without Conflicts of Global Corporate Interest. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
Nothing complements a ball game like a bag of roasted peanuts. I like to eat them 3-4 at a time, and I'm talking the jumbo ones, lightly salted and fresh from the shell.
Ah, peanuts, baseball, and the crack of my tooth!
Don't let toothaches interfere with your life. When you can't get to the dentist, get Maximum Strength Ambisol. It contains the same strong pain relief medicine your dentist uses, so it works faster than you can say, ah. Maximum Strength Ambisol. Dentist strong, so the pain is gone. Use as directed.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. I think that was very nice. I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, no.
America Radio Network.
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why not get something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
It's the Tom Hartman Program, the pill that will help you escape the matrix. Truth in broadcasting. Our producer, Joe McPherson, down in Atlanta, put together a little montage of comments. This is the state of the art as a result of excluding third-party candidates. Because Ralph Nader wasn't sitting at the table. This is what happened on the McNeil Lehrer show when George Bush and Al Gore were, quote, debating each other, end quote, on this program. This is great.
I agree with that. I agree with that.
Do you agree with that, Governor?
I do. I don't disagree with that. I certainly don't disagree. I certainly agree with that.
You would agree?
I would agree. I also agree.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with Governor Bush. The governor and I agree on some things where this subject is concerned. And I agree with a lot of the other things that the governor has said. And I basically agree with Dick Cheney.
Sarah in Santa Fe has called 1-800-TALK. Yes, 1-800-825-5937. Sarah, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Your thoughts on this?
Oh, yes. Well, I heard only part of what you were saying about the League of Women Voters, but I wanted to just briefly tell you that in Santa Fe, I've observed that the League of Women Voters has been less than objective in certain meetings. For example, we had a big ruckus with the school board a few years back because several million dollars was unaccounted for missing from the budget. And we would have these meetings that were refereed by the League of Women Voters, and they clearly had, I can't say that they had a position, but they seemed to be so afraid of conflict that they would design it such that it just seemed that certain people only could get their views heard, or they seemed to state a position, and then there would be a meeting with only about 20 people in the room, and they would still have little cards that you had to fill out. You couldn't raise your hand and say anything. So they were really into control in a big way.
Yeah.
And the result was loss of objectivity, that people are just so afraid of being branded a domestic terrorist these days. And this was before 9/11, by the way. This occurred. So even before 9/11, I noticed what seemed to be a shift in the league in the way that they approached issues.
Yeah, although at least they're trying to facilitate public dialogue. I mean, the alternative could be a mess.
Yeah, but I guess you could say that in a way, yeah. I don't know
how the league operates on a local basis. My concern is the 1987 when the Commission on Presidential Debates came along and the league basically bailed out, or 84, they bailed out of the sponsoring the presidential debates, and they had always allowed third party candidates in, and now you've got this this commission that's corporate sponsored, that's run by hack politicians that is of, by, and for two parties, and that's it.
Yeah. Well, what I'm saying is I think they could be a valuable tool, and they could function the way their charter or whatever says they're supposed to function, but they don't, in my observation. But anyway, that's all I wanted to add.
Well, thank you, Sarah.
Sure.
I appreciate that. And one of the things that always comes to my mind whenever people have, whenever any of us have concerns. I mean, my latest book is about attention deficit disorder in schools, the Edison gene. And people call up and they say, I've got a problem with schools, rah, rah, rah. And my answer is, have you joined the PTA? Have you run for the school board? If you don't have the time, have you at least showed up, once a month and talked to teachers? If we want to revitalize the institutions of democracy, we have to participate. I'm going to a meeting tonight that Bernie Sanders is going to be at. It'll be interesting to see him. But, get out there. Get active. And so you may want to consider joining the league and taking them over from within, as Pat Robertson did with the Republican Party. I think that's a pretty good scheme. Granted, not everybody has the inclination or the time, but providing alternative options. But I really do think that for those of us who want to see progressive and positive change in the various political parties, that the most effective way to do it is going to be to bore into them or to push them from the side, but to get active and aggressive and outspoken in doing it. Tim in Hartford and Nick in New Jersey, hang on. We'll pick up your calls right after the break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. You're in the No Spoon Feeding Zone, and we'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Young Americans don't know much about geography, but the tools that could help them learn are getting better all the time. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. A recent survey sponsored by National Geographic found a lot of ignorance about the layout of the world among 18 to 24-year-old Americans. For example, 30% of them could not locate the Pacific Ocean on a map. Bill Stair is the former president of National Geographic Maps.
11% of young citizens of the United States can't even locate the United States on a map. More young people in the United States know where the island featured in last season's TV show Survivor, where it's located, than can find Israel on a map. And, you know, to understand what's going on in the world, we have to know something about it.
Sweden, Germany, and Italy scored highest among those surveyed. Stair says those countries place more emphasis on travel and the study of language and geography. But he says Americans have plenty of opportunity to learn about the world because the tools to do so are getting better all the time. Information and images collected from satellites make it possible to add detail to maps like never before. Stair says a lot of that information is readily available, both on the Internet and in books. For example, he says the new edition of the National Geographic World Atlas for Young Explorers includes up-to-date satellite imagery designed to catch the eye of even today's most video-dependent kids. Stair says parents need to get these kinds of brightly illustrated books into their homes. He says they should leave them out in plain view, maybe next to the TV remote control, where their children can easily pick them up and browse. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com. And join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
People get mad. There's a train you're calling. You don't need no baggage. You just need all you know.
Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass destruction. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Historically, third-party candidates have injected issues into the discourse that later became adopted by the major candidates. Abolition, the women's right to vote, Social Security, child labor, public schools, direct election of senators, paid vacations, labor unions, all of these came from third parties. A plurality of voters are registered as independents. Two-thirds of Americans say that they want a viable third-party candidate in their races. 76% wanted Perot included in the 1996 debates, and 64% wanted Nader and Buchanan included in the 2000 debates. But it ain't happening. And why is that? 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Tim in Hartford, Connecticut, has thoughts on the topic. Tim, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, I got lots of thoughts on the topic.
I'll bet you do, Tim.
First, can we start with the so-called progressives? Can they actually be civil amongst themselves? I'm starting to realize that, already the talk and the mean-spiritedness about a Nader possibly getting in is overheating. To the point.
Well, and there's that, and then also, I mean, Dick Gephardt just accused Howard Dean of being like Rush Limbaugh.
Oh, yeah, really.
You have to think that Gephardt is melting down when he resorts to calling Howard Dean Rush Limbaugh. You know, it's like,
I think he's listening incredible. To his writers too much and not his average folks and stuff. Unfortunately, yeah. These guys have got too many, comedy and zing liners and yeah. That sort of stuff, just fades. Yeah, I mean, I'm not probably going to vote for Dean, but they compared him to Newt Gingrich, and one minute he's George McGovern, the next he is Newt Gingrich. They have to find an attack and probably stick to it. But
yeah,
I mean,
they need a slogan that they can stay with if they're going to take.
Yeah, that's true. But then once that they all eventually cave in and support the eventual nominee, including Dennis Kucinich, who just made it very clear to all of us out here. For a lot of Greens considering working for Dennis Kucinich and that stuff, he's pretty much said out flat that he's going to support the Democratic nominee no matter who it is.
Yeah.
So, it's a situation right now where, you played that montage and so many people were so mad when Nader said that there was, on the major issues, there was very little difference. Doesn't that really prove it to begin with? I mean, you've got someone like Gore trying to, cuddle up and be next to Bush instead of saying, here's my real differences, and he's absolutely wrong about this kind of stuff. And certainly the situation out in California, where I think people realize that Peter Camejo, the Green Party candidate, actually probably won some of the debates and making points, and there's a clear difference to a lot of people. Now, granted, he didn't get the vote because people were concerned about Arnold Schwarzenegger, and rushed over to vote for Bustamante, but that was a process that seemed to work fairly well.
You think that's what happened? Do you think that that's or
oh, absolutely.
Think
people were just realizing that the possibility that the empty-headed guy with his own funny little lines from his movies or was going to be the nominee. I mean, Camejo was polling above 5%, and then his numbers dropped because people were just afraid. I think part of the reason was that there was probably some anger at Davis, and why that didn't translate to a Green Party candidate. I think that they were trying to vote that once again, like our motto, you can't vote your fears, you've got to vote your dreams.
Yeah,
that's very, very important.
Well, Tim, here's the question I have for you. If Ralph gets into the race and you're supporting Ralph Nader in this presidential candidacy in the presidential race, don't you think that progressives or folks on Ralph's side? It's really strange. I don't know if you can hear that jet. We've got here in the middle of Vermont for the first time in all the years I've lived here. This military squadron just flew over. Maybe they've. They saw the article in Common Dreams and they've tuned into the show. Anyhow, don't you think that we should be encouraging a third party on the right as well?
Well, the funny part is that whether a third party springs up organically from the right, that will happen and I contend pretty much that the Perot situation was that. He certainly had the money to back it. A lot of people who would consider themselves you know, hawks on the deficit, that sort of thing, came from the right and really fueled that effort and everything. But,
yeah, but
once again, it goes back to the argument that the Greens did not come from the Democratic Party, you know, and then, you know, so if the people on the right start their own, you know, third party movement and everything like that, then it has to be, you know, spontaneously and done on its own. It's going to take years and years, like the Greens did to do it. But the problem is right now with the Democrats and their ideals that we're going to squash them, move on, trying to shut down Nader's campaign in 2000, bombarding it with emails and all the dirty tricks and that sort of stuff out there, is not going to build a progressive movement. The Greens are ready to work with true progressives and diselect George Bush, but, you know, we're not the enemy. Bush is the enemy. That's what they still haven't learned that.
Yeah, good point.
Thanks.
Tim, was there another point you wanted to make?
Oh, no, just on that and the fact that, you know, people, as people have seen that on the local level, that the third parties continue to get elected at a really high rate. It's not this pipe dream that's out there.
Oh, yeah, it's happening all over the country.
It's happening all over the country, and people are starting to realize that and stuff. So, you know, we're certainly not going to be concentrating on nothing but the presidential election. It's the local levels, you know, where so many of these races are uncontested by Democrats, you know, not stepping up to and putting some good, hard candidates against these Republican congressmen and stuff like that. So, you know, the movement's there, and it's not Ralph Nader's movement. It's the Green Party movement. That's what people have to learn.
Yeah, for sure. And Tim, don't you think that the Green Party would be best served if they were to spend at least a good chunk of their time, energy, money, and efforts on IRV, instant runoff voting?
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, but even trying to educate people about the debates, I mean, most people still think that these debates are nonpartisan, fair, and all that sort of stuff. You know, just trying to get into the initial debates and have a people's debate commission out there, I think that's going to be a major issue that we're going to also be pressing
Step
in
one.
January.
Yeah, I agree. Step one, we have to get the corporations out of the debating society here, out of the commission on presidential debates. Tim, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. It is a mess. I mean, this Commission on Presidential Debates, established back in 1987, run by the Republican and Democratic parties, corporate-sponsored, most of the board members with close ties to multinational corporations, funded through tax-deductible corporate contributions. What do you expect? It's like corporate America putting on a show for us. Nick in New Jersey has some thoughts on this. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. Nick, thanks for calling. You're on the Tom Hartman program, and you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Yeah, it's sometimes it's hard to keep up with the program because we're moving to so many topics. But back what you just said is about the corporations. Until they're out of it, I mean, we're going to have problems. And until we, again, on another topic you touched on just a little while ago, until we actually start to teach the democratic process in our schools, we're going to have these problems.
Time for civics classes, or time to bring back debating societies, or both?
I mean, starting from the early grades to where you know the democratic process is taught. Because, you know, I have a teenage son, and he has a lot of friends coming around, and the kids are clueless. They're absolutely clueless as how the democratic process works. As you know, what does a vote mean? What does this mean? What does that mean? And it's just not being taught in the schools. And until we do that, we'll never get the corporations out from controlling our political discourse.
You know, Nick, one of the things that the Soviet Union was particularly good at, and many of the communist governments around the world were particularly good at, was convincing or educating their youth and convincing them that there was value in their philosophy. I mean, everybody in the schools had to study Karl Marx and had to study, you know, advanced communist theory and all that stuff. And, you know, Ayn Rand was indoctrinated and all that stuff when she went up through the school system in the Soviet Union and went to college there. Because they realized that if you want to have a governmental system, it's going to survive. You have to have people who are active and involved and believe in it. I mean, even if it's a sham system, you have to have people believe in it.
Well, look at our country. Just, you know, who are the groups that actually control? We got people sending all their kids to these private schools to where the values in the schools are the same as the values in the home and the community. And we're just not doing that in our public schools. We're not teaching democracy to where everybody says, this is a what's the average Joe do? The average Joe... He might find a catchphrase or two a week before the election, have to scramble from work on election day to go vote for a catchphrase that he remembers.
Yeah.
And that's where our political discourse is, and it's a sham. And I feel that the only way to change it, I mean, we got people like us. I mean, I'm in my 40s. I don't know where you are. But, I mean, I'm trying to teach my son some things that I was never taught in school when I was
Well, I'm in my 50s, and we did learn about democracy in the 1950s in the school. In fact, when I was in the third grade, I think, we memorized the first part of the Declaration of Independence and Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. And I think that by the time I was out of sixth grade, I had, at least, speaking for myself,
right.
I think I had a pretty good understanding of American democracy.
It's not happening today, though.
Oh yeah, I know. I mean, we've raised three kids. We have three kids who are from their early 20s to their 30s, you're right. It's not happening.
Hey, can I veer off the subject a little bit for the original reason that I called? Before the last of the top hour, you were talking about Boykin.
Mm-hmm.
Right, being in the military, I mean, Boykin is just a systematic. He is symptomatic of what we have in the military today. Okay, we started the all-volunteer force went in 1973, correct? Someplace around there.
Makes sense.
So what you're seeing now in the military is a lot of people like myself, who was a military man, who are, I consider myself something, just slightly left of center. A progressive centrist is how I would classify myself. And people like myself, we're pretty rare in the military. You see a lot of young officers now coming in who have that same ideal, like that. I would call it the progressive centrist. These guys are coming in, they do their 4 to 6 years, and they say, you know, this really isn't for me. These people, you know, everybody above me has this mentality that's way to the right of where I am, and they bolt.
This is why I think that we need to reinstitute the draft in the United
States. I agree 100%. I agree because we are not getting a good representation of our, you know, of society as a whole in the military. We're getting a lot of people to the right.
Yeah, I think there's a number of good reasons for it. Number one, and this is one of the reasons why some countries have historically had drafts, is that if you have a draft, then you have a military that represents a cross-section of the population, at least
right.
in theory. If you have a fair draft and it's well-administered,
right.
There's always going to be people like George W. Bush who weasel around things. But,
right.
you know, he was the minority. I mean, most of the people who served in Congress who were in the military ended up getting stuck in Vietnam during that era. So number one. Number two, you're providing kids with a rite of passage. Rites of passage are incredibly important things. And
we don't have that in this society.
That's right. We have lost it, or it has become now. I mean, it used to be high school graduation was a big deal, because with a high school diploma, you could get a good job.
Right.
That's not the case anymore. So the high school, you know, graduation is like, no big deal. You know, it's college. And by that time, kids are too old for rites of passage. So they're inventing their own, and their rites of passage have to do with drinking or with drugs or
Can you down this fifth and this 12-pack, you know?
Right, and it's incredibly dysfunctional. So having a draft would create a rite of passage. Now the downside, of course, is that you risk militarizing your culture. And I think that the appropriate way to balance that is to offer people the choice between going into the military or going into some sort of public service.
Right.
They have this in Germany,
right.
the program, the Salem right. Children's Village in Stettstenach, Germany. I'll be there in next month, in fact. Has people there constantly, young, 18, 19, 20-year-olds,
right.
who have chosen to put in 2 years working for a nonprofit. Rather than spending 2 years in the army,
right?
Maybe it's 1 year. I don't remember. It's either 1 or 2 years in Germany, but it's required service, and it's like this rite of passage, and it's everybody has a sense of paying back. There's a sense of, you know, I'm part of this society. I have an obligation to it, and you get that at a fairly young age. And I frankly think that that's a good thing.
I agree with you 100% because we have so many young people today who feel disenfranchised from this society and no real connection to it.
Well, let's support Charlie Rangel then. You know, he's out there saying let's bring back the draft.
I do. I like Charlie Rangel. Heck yeah. You know,
I think a lot of people think that he's just saying it as a way of, you know, thumbing his nose at George W. But
right.
A
lot of people, you know, you hear the big argument there is that, well, it'll reduce the professionalism of our military. We won't have the professional military, the guys that come in and want to stay 6, 8, 10 years or make it a career, you know? And I say, well, who needs a professional military besides an empire, you know?
Yeah, I mean, well, there's that, and secondly, actually, what will happen is, you'll get some people in there who go, hey, this ain't a bad, you know, this is a nice job, and it's
exactly
a job
right.
security, and there are some people who would like it and stay, and other people will say, oh, now I know what that's about, and they'll get out, and that's a fine thing.
Right. But the way the system is now, what we touched on earlier, is you have a lot of guys who, like myself, I stuck it out, but you have a lot of guys going in there who don't really feel the way their superiors feel as far as, you know, this hard line, you know, to the right, you know, mentality, and they, you know, they do their time and, you know, they bolt. And so our lead, the vast majority of the leadership that we're getting in the military does have a, I would say, not a centrist view. I'll put it nicely.
Right. I agree with you. And thank you, Nick, for the call.
All right.
You know, I appreciate your comments. And Thomas Jefferson, it's interesting. I'm working on this book right now that'll be out next year about the history of democracy in America. And I've been reading Jefferson's letters. I mean, just going through hundreds of them. And I was editing a really long one this weekend, plugging it into the book. And he over and over and over again talks about how opposed he was to a standing army. This is the genesis of the Second Amendment, that he felt that we should not have an army during times of peace, and he wanted this written into the Constitution. And there was a huge battle over this that lasted many years during the period post-Revolutionary War, right up until Jefferson's presidency. Really, it was a battle that he ultimately lost. But he felt that we shouldn't have, and the National Guard sort of came out of this. And there's a lot of interesting things. Also, opendebates.org. I'll tell you about this when we come back from the break. There is a group that is working to establish a Citizens Debate Commission. And I wanted to be sure that before this hour is out, I let you know about that. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, the No Spoon Feeding Zone. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Toyota owners, get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at toyota.com/owners.
Ask how, ask now, ask Sherwin-Williams.
It's the great savings event at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Hurry in and save $6 a gallon on all paints and stains, including Super Paint and Everclean in our new plastic twist and pour container. Plus, save 30 to 64% on all wallpaper. Stop by soon. Sale ends Monday.
Ask how, ask now, ask Sherwin-Williams.
For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817. The Washington Monthly.
Now in Sacramento, there's Conan the Groper promising he's changed.
Have behaved badly sometimes. Yes, it is true that I was on rowdy movie sets, and I have done things that were not right, which I thought then was playful, but now I recognize that I have offended people.
I thought I was being playful. Just because I'd grabbed their breast, I thought I was playful. Kathy's laughing at my Schwarzenegger. I'm sorry, I can't do it. All right, you do it.
I've groped and molested women in the past, but if you elect me, I promise I'll never do it again, because you know powerful politicians never abuse their power for sex.
Okay.
And that's how it's done.
Okay.
Hello, cutie pie. Your clothes. Give them to me. Now. Come on.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Hey, you want to earn $125,000 a year for a job that might typically pay $30,000 or $40,000 or less? For example, being a pesticide applicator? Something Tom DeLay used to do. Yes, Mr. Tom DeLay, the exterminator. Well, he could go to Houston to the Wyndham Greens Point Hotel and Holiday Inn Intercontinental on John F. Kennedy Boulevard, where Halliburton is holding their recruiting fair. And if he was willing to sign a document pledging not to talk to the media, according to the Houston Business Journal, he could make as much as he could. He expects to make as much as $125,000 a year. Speaking of this guy who's going to spray bugs in Iraq, which he says is significantly more than he would make here in Houston, where he has been in business for himself since the early 1980s, etc. So Halliburton paying big bucks. Well, they can afford it. After all, they've got big bucks. But I digress. OpenDebates.org. Check it out. They're working to establish a citizens' debate commission. They have plans to be similar to the League of Women Voters. They consist of progressive and conservative civic groups. They are in favor of full transparency. They offer challenging debate formats, and they want to include popular independent candidates. I mean, consider what has happened over the last couple of years since the CDP has taken over, the Commission on Presidential Debates, this corporate-funded debate thing. In 1996, Bob Dole gave Bill Clinton the power to dictate the schedule and format. So Clinton set it up to have small audiences and put it opposite major sporting events. So the result, the smallest debate audiences in history. They've watered down the debates. The amount the candidates have to agree with each other about what they're going to debate, what they're going to argue about. In 2000, there were only five topics that got discussed: education, tax cuts, leadership experience, prescription drugs under Medicare, and Social Security reform. Only five topics. The percentage of the time that the Democrat and Republican candidates agreed with each other in 1998 in that debate was 11.5%. In 2000. 37.3%, because the third-party candidates are being pushed out because the debate format has been dumbed down. OpenDebates.org is offering an alternative. I encourage you to check them out and to get in touch with the League of Women Voters and try to revive them. Say, hey, you know, let's bring back some of this stuff. And this whole Commission on Presidential Debates, I'm really not, you know, how can we change this? I frankly don't know. I would contact. I'm going to see Bernie Sanders tonight. I'll ask him about this, and I'll report back to you what his thoughts are on how we can change these kinds of things, because we have this absolute mess in the political discourse, where our debates are being held in a forum that is being sponsored, controlled, and manipulated by multinational corporations. Not healthy.
IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Dick Dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal
Narwhal.
Talk. We talk about what you do to your animals and what your animals do to you. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal questions from A to Z. Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Austria.
Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Come, fireback.
Yeah.